Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Everybody in. The ceremony is about to begin.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 122. I'm Dave. I'm here with Ray from Into the Night from Last Sons of Krypton. Ray, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing very well, Dave. Look, I can't believe I am in the swamp.
You are in the swamp, man. You're in the pad. You're where it all happens. This is where Stu and I planned to take the world over.
I'm drinking it in. I see a massive collection in front of me. I'm pumped for tonight.
There's lots going on. First off, Ray, it's a real pleasure to have you here. Tried to record the other night. Technical difficulties. I want to say the Russians were hacking it. I'm going to say that right now. I think the Russians were hacking it.
I thought I heard a few clicks as we were talking, so I would be careful.
I'm getting onto the red phone, going direct to the president. Ray, you come from Into the Night and Last Sons of Krypton. Have I got the names right?
Absolutely. Yep, spot on, both of them.
And Into the Night is a podcast?
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's a podcast. We're a little behind with you, so we've just cracked over 100.
It's all right, though.
It's all right. Good, purely Moon Knight-based. Sometimes we get people in, like you've been on the show with Desert Island Books. So mostly comics, but we try to center it around Moon Knight.
You do a great job. It's pretty interesting. Like Moon Knight without being like a A1 supporter, but I've read Moon Knight runs like Doug Munchenkevich, and also when what was the run with, was it Charlie Houston?
Yeah, 2006.
Collected that in singles.
David Finch as well.
Yes.
Fantastic artist. Yeah, no, that was a lot of loonies, one of their favourite runs. Mine too, I'd say.
And I also played a fair bit of Moon Knight in Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of the loonies that we've... The way that their gateway drug into Moon Knight has been through video games. It seems he's got quite a presence.
Into playing Deadpool, saying a lot of funny stuff. Literally, I went and researched a comic and got Cable and Deadpool from there. So it can work.
Yeah, right.
I know there's a new Marvel Ultimate Alliance game on Nintendo Switch, I believe.
Have you got a Switch?
No, I don't. It's pissing me off. because, I mean, I'm dying for it to Marvel to do another proper sort of like video game, you know?
Yeah, no. Well, there's the Avengers game coming out. Is it on all the platforms or...?
I believe it is. Okay, an old console game. Not coming out until next year. It had a pretty rubbishy trailer, but I'm not going to judge people on... It's non-gameplay, like movie trailers, like a year out from release.
Yeah. There are a few things to be tweaked, a few things to be finalised.
I want to see Punisher in there. I want to see Moon Knight. I want to see Daredevil. I want to see the street level guys,
Ghost Rider.
Oh, yeah. Don't even get me started. Ghost Rider. Was he in Marvel Ultimate Alliance? He might have been in two.
Yeah, I'm not much of a gamer. I think I played Ultimate Alliance, the first one. I assume so.
He was definitely in, maybe it was Marvel versus Capcom. There was a game where I remember him in 100%, but I'm not sure what it was.
Yeah.
So, Ray, other than Moon Knight, just to kind of get a feel for you when you're here, what are some of your other favourite characters, like, in terms of comics? Like, what drew you in?
Yeah, I'd say definitely, first and foremost, Daredevil.
Was it the Frank Miller run, Bendis? What was it?
It was, actually, I got reintroduced with the Bendis run. I'm a child of the 90s, so for me it was Chichester, D.G. Chichester, and Lee Weeks were the big ones. Lee Weeks, the artist.
Didn't they do a really... Was it them who did a really good Daredevil versus Punisher? Maybe it wasn't them, but that was a pretty good... called Means and Ends.
Oh, I've read that.
It's good read.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was them. They could well have been. The Bendis run just reintroduced me. That blew me away.
Some of Bendis' best stuff.
Yeah, very good. But, also as well, Dave, I gloss over them, but the main ones, like for me, Wolvie, Spidey as well.
Why gloss over them? I can spend a lot of time on Wolverine and Spider-Man.
I mean, they're up there. They're very much my favourites. Yeah. Daredevil, I'm very partial towards Madrox, the Multiple Man.
X-Factor, right?
The Peter David run. I'm a really big...
He's always a hot topic on the signal.
I know you love Peter David.
We love it when he pays income tax. Did you contribute? tribute to the in-cut
No, I did. I can't say I'm a fan of him in that regards, but no. His writing is...
He's fucking cash grab.
He is a bit of a cash grab.
His writing's quite good, actually,
Great. It's consistent. Even, like, nowadays, like, I'm following Symbiote Spider-Man by Peter David.
How is it?
It's good. It's very good. And he released the Incredible Hulk Last Call with Dale Keaghan.
His Incredible Hulk run, I've often been interested in checking out.
Brilliant, brilliant run. Get it on Epic Collection. Epic Collection. I think there's about three or four volumes on it. Very good as well.
Did he do Joe Fix It? Was that him?
I think he did.
Because when I started collecting comics, that was on the newsstands.
Mm.
And I read quite a few of them. No, Peter David, all joking aside, his Young Justice. Have you ever read that?
No.
I read it when it came out. Yeah, exceptionally good.
Okay. He's done a lot with DC or...
No, I don't think he's done a lot. That might have been one of his few things. But it was like a 60-issue run or something.
Okay. Yeah, he tends to stay on series when he's there. And also, look, you know, I just want to throw in as well Namor
the Submariner.
The Submariner. He's good because he's an arsehole. He's a douche.
Were you picking up solo Namor or is he... What book is he in?
John Byrne was one that I picked up. Again, it was in the 90s.
Was this Fantastic Four or was it...
No, John Byrne. It was Namor the Submariner. It was his own title. Okay. Yeah, it lasted a good, maybe about 40 issues or so.
I've never gotten into him, but I do appreciate he's a pretty cool character and can be used well. Like, I've read a lot of him, like when Hickman used him. And Matt Fraction used him in X-Men. Like, I found that stuff interesting, you know?
I mean, him playing off Black Panther, there's that rivalry, so... Yeah.
And his rivalry with Reed, because he adores Sue Storm.
And
did he fuck Sue Storm? I say yes. I say yes, he did. Like,
I think he probably did.
I don't understand why people are so shy about it. Like, he did. He did. And she was very willing, and it was like it was a brief fling, but it was very physical.
Yeah, well, they definitely had something for each other there, so...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I
like to get to the heart of these stories. You know what I'm saying?
I
am the lowest lane of comic books. Yes. Like, you know, I like to get
deep.
I'm one step away from tweeting whoever fucking wrote the issue and going, okay, all joking aside, what happened?
I think you should. I mean, social platforms these days, why not?
Well, I cracked a story open with Sebi Sobolski recently. We all remember it. I've tweeted him before about Wolverine. Yeah. I'm not afraid.
I tell you, I have tweeted him as well. I have not got a bite once. So you must have been doing something. Yeah.
Just got to know when to pick and choose, man.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask this question to you. What kind of age were you when you started reading comic books? And are you surprised by the dominance of especially Marvel, but also DC, the multiplexes now with the cinemas? Like,
I am. I'm very much surprised. I started, back in the early 90s.
Right.
Very first comic was back in 86. I remember it was Captain America. It was off the newsstand.
It was Mark Gruenwald.
Family trip. Yeah. I mean, but I didn't appreciate him back then.
Yeah, you just grabbed it, though.
Yeah, it had Armadillo on the front cover. They were falling off the building. I thought that was pretty fun. One of the Iron Mans were kind of early as well.
Sure.
But that was purely the newsagents' editions. So around the 90s, I kind of got into it. But very, very happy that it's exploded into the cinema. Yeah. We're living in a golden age here, Dave. I mean, these were the...
With dark undertones, though. It's all gold on the surface, man. You get down to the sewer level, it ain't so fucking pleasant, but yeah. Well,
yeah, I mean, there are some hits and misses, you know, and that's always... And there were some works in progress.
As comic book lovers, though, I agree with you. We're spoilt for choice.
That's crazy.
Like, TV, even in the 90s, we wouldn't have expected this, would we?
No, not at all. You know? In the 90s, what was I? I was watching... there was the Incredible Hulk TV movies.
Yeah.
Did you watch them?
I'm old enough to Bill Bixby and all that.
Yep.
And I'm old enough to remember the show when I was a little kid. I used to watch it all the time.
Yeah, we watched it as a family.
Lou Ferrigno and Bill Bixby.
That little song at the end, the theme, it was brilliant. I loved it. I loved his eyes changing colour. I love the whole
fantastic.
Clothes ripping.
That show was a shot of fresh air that gave some life to characters like Hulk. And they had Spider-Mans and stuff at the time. Like, really helped years before it became popular.
Yeah.
Like, Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno were out of debt, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they were. And it kind of, I don't know about you, but for me, it kind of crept up. Like, all of a sudden, they did the groundwork. But then you talk about Blade and X-Men.
X-Men and Spider-Man 1. It's that trilogy.
Like, do you remember watching X-Men when it first came out?
I very much remember it.
Yeah, I remember it, that first scene going, I think I turned to my mate. I was like, I can't believe And I was telling him everything. I was going, that's Magneto.
Yeah.
This is the whole kind of Holocaust thing. It was fantastic.
Those X-Men movies are underrated for the level of impact they had.
Yeah.
Because remember, that came out before Spider-Man 1.
Yeah.
And then it accelerated. I remember saying to a friend of mine, when they'd done X-Men like 1, and I said, there's no reason. And Spider-Man had come out. I said, there's no reason they can't do all these characters together in films. And I wasn't even thinking Avengers, but just group films. And he goes, I'll never do it. And I said, believe you me, X-Men's already a group film.
Yeah.
Like, if they can sort out the licensing of who owns what, because at that time it was still unclear.
Yeah.
And it just turns out that Marvel just... I'm not an Avengers guy, but they just turned me around into loving it.
They did. I mean, I don't know about you, but the X-Men movies, for me at the beginning, were the strongest ones.
Sure.
Like, I like this...
X-Men 1 and 2.
X-Men 1 and 2, yeah. Mm. X-Men 1 went for a second. I think because of the whole hype and being a comic book fan. Sure. Then X-Men 2 blew it out of the water for me. X-Men 3, not so much. But
had some good scenes.
But it had some good scenes.
Not good overall.
Yeah, had Beast and Multiple Man, which was good. Mm. But Spider-Man didn't really capture me until Spider-Man 2.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it was good, but I still enjoyed X-Men 1 over more. Spider-Man 1.
Sure.
And then, you know, the little... Iron Man movie kind of crept up out of nowhere slowly, and that Marvel said, we're going to do this on our own.
Dude, as someone whose first ever comic I bought with my own money was Iron Man, I always had a soft spot for him.
Yeah.
And it blew me. Like, I'm also a huge RDJ fan.
Yeah.
And so the two things combined, I was amazed by what Robert Downey Jr. did with that character.
He's changed the character.
Yeah.
Entirely. Now.
Well, I think he kind of captured the heart and soul of the character, and then they formed it around RDJ, you know?
I'd say definitely true. Because I collected a fair bit of West Coast Avengers back in the day as well.
Sure.
Iron Man was a bit character. I know he was the original Avenger, but he was in the doldrums.
He was
for
in a slump,
long time.
Man.
Yeah,
huge slump.
A big slump. And he, you know, they changed the armor, they did all this and that. He had little arcs as well, which were quite significant.
I guess the thing was that the basics of his story are cool. So when you go back to basics on a character like Tony Stark, it's actually really cool.
Yeah.
I remember Matt Fraction was once saying he always likes to write Tony Stark as like Jerry Lewis at the end of the telethon when he's got the ties down and his hair's all raggedy. Okay. He's kind of like been going so long
and
he's almost burnt out but still going.
Okay.
I always like that kind of thought pattern behind it.
Yeah.
I think Iron Man 3 doesn't get enough credit. I think that's a fantastic movie, some of the visuals in that.
I really enjoyed Iron Man 3.
Yeah, me too, man.
The big twist, I mean, I didn't really care. I mean, the fact was, it wasn't really the Mandarin, right?
Oh, that didn't worry me at all.
Didn't worry me. And I loved Shane Black's direction of it.
Yeah. Some of the visuals, though, when the explosion right on the building right by the sea.
Oh, it was really good. Even Iron Man 2, which is the least favourite, I did go back and watch it.
Fantastic performance by Sam Rockwell.
It was good, yeah. Mm. But how good is the... I mean, you know, we're lauding it enough, but the original, I watched it again recently. Right. It still stands up.
It's a great film.
This is like 12 years, you know, ago.
It's a landmark film. Now, just turning to something else, I want to hear what you think of my Ghost Rider Punisher Moon Knight pitch with Blade thrown in. Now, I want to say this to you, Ray.
Yep.
LA, inner city crime, society in collapse, vampires and gangbangers roaming the streets.
Excellent.
I mean, come on, man.
Isn't that how LA is at the moment?
I mean, I sometimes lie awake at night thinking about it, man. And I'm putting these thoughts into my new book.
Yep.
This is the new book that I'm doing with The Morn. But like, how they haven't done Punisher, Moon Knight, Blade team-ups yet on TV and stuff, I don't know. And don't forget there's a new Ghost Rider show coming out.
Yep.
Which has the same actor who played him in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but with his own, you know, new chronology.
I think
what about Moon Knight, dude? Could he be getting a run?
Oh, absolutely. I'd be interested. Absolutely. Definitely. And if you're talking street level as well, always Punisher's going to be in the mix in there somewhere.
It's one of the most popular characters at street level.
Yep.
Stu sometimes says he's lost popularity. Wrong. Wrong.
Yeah.
Look at the Marvel Comics at the moment. He's got about 3 series ongoing. Yeah.
You know, and he was the starring, I didn't read it all, but the starring feature of War of the Realms. Apparently he was a MVP.
Which I personally hate that he's even involved in that. But I just think it's so fucking stupid he's in like cosmic adventures.
Yeah,
that to me is just like, please.
Yeah.
Bitch, please.
What did you think of, was it Frankencastle then back in that day?
I absolutely hated it, Ray. I walked into Jimmy King's comics and I said, cut it.
Yeah,
I actually said to the guy, it wasn't you, it was someone else, so I said, cut it, man. He goes, he tried to sell me on it. I go, don't bother. You're talking to a dead man. Yeah. Put the phone down. You're talking to a dead man. No, Frankencastle I thought was one of the worst things I've ever read in comic books.
Okay.
And one of the worst crimes perpetrated on Frankencastle ever.
Yeah. One of those ones that you blemishes that you want to forget and forget
I had forgotten
happens.
Until you brought it up, Ray. Yeah. But but I have a preference for like I get why he's in War of the Realms and all that. Like that's Marvel. But my preference is him fighting street level.
Yeah.
You know? And to be honest, I think Moon Knight can work. Like, what Doug Munchen Sienkiewicz did was awesome. You know?
Look, he has been in LA before, so your premise is really
cool.
He
was in West Coast Avengers, wasn't he?
He was. He was in West Coast Avengers for a long time. The Bendis run had him in LA.
Right.
But look, you know, you're setting the scene of vampires, gangbangers at night. LA, I'm thinking like, I'm getting pictures of like, you know, Fear the Walking Dead.
That's
it on the West Coast.
Yes.
That sort of vibe, you know, with that kind of sunny
society
filter.
In collapse.
Yep. And you have Ghost Rider, Punisher, Moon Knight there.
What do you think about my one where Ghost Rider drives to the airport, Frank goes in, he picks up, then he turns around the skull, burning.
Yep.
And Frank's like, let's fucking roll.
Yeah, look, the only thing missing there is if Frank was smoking and he just lit a ciggy off Ghost Rider's face, that'd be fantastic. Off they go.
So I'm glad that I've got somebody who is on the same wavelength as me with this fucking show. Like, just make it, Marvel.
A bit of fun.
Come on, Disney, like, give it to us. We're begging for it.
Make it graphic, make it gory.
Yeah. I was talking to Jimmy Terzis today on WhatsApp, and shout out to Jimmy.
Yeah.
Basically, Jimmy was saying he's working at a comic book store, and all this shit, people are not buying the fringe titles. They're buying Frank Cho covers. They're buying, like, Betty and Veronica meet whoever the fuck it was, Red Sonja. Like, they're buying some classic titles. People in the store are actually saying Marvel suck right now.
No.
Like, it's getting some heat in store.
Yeah.
This is coming direct from the fucking front line.
Oh, jeez.
So, and he's saying, Dave, you're on the fucking wavelength. Like, and I started talking about Punisher and Moon Knight. He's just like, give us more.
Anyway. Exactly.
You've got something, right?
Sorry. Yeah, here we go.
What is this? Colin Bunn's got a podcast and you're excited. What's going on? Tell us what's going on, Ray.
I don't know how I came across this. It was on Twitter. I saw it at the bungalow.
You're listening to it every night, aren't you?
No, the bungalow. Let's not go that far. It's pretty cool. Colin Bunn, look, vested interest because he was a Moon Knight writer as well.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that, actually.
So he came in off the back of the Warren Ellis and the Brian Wood run.
Very strong run.
Yeah. 2014, 2015. So he had a 6-issue run as well. Okay. Very cool. Colin Bunn's always been at the forefront, hasn't he?
Very, very prolific writer.
He's a prolific writer. A few hits and misses. But I thought it would be good because he's such a big... Like, he's a big name in Marvel. And I was just surprised to see that he had a podcast.
He's a hard worker. He's a Stephen King of comic books.
He is.
In terms of his prolific nature.
Yeah.
Certainly, he did some very good Deadpool.
Okay, yes.
Did Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe? Mm-hmm. He suffers, I think, from there's too much Colin Bunn in stores all at once. He's competing with himself kind of thing.
I don't think it's good.
He floods the market.
Yeah, I don't think it's good for consumers because if you get all these titles...
And also, I don't think he's that good. You know, like, it's not like it's... He isn't dropping, like, classics.
No. I mean, he's a solid, steady writer. Nothing, you know, groundbreaking.
I'd give him a B-.
Okay.
You know, that's not that bad.
No, that's all right.
Yeah. But what's he doing on the podcast, right? What's going on the podcast?
It's a team up with him and his wife, Cindy.
Is it called Cash Grab?
No. The Bungalow.
Well, I like to play on names.
I just found out as well, Ryan Stegman has got a podcast as well.
Okay.
Really nice artist, spotty artist.
Yeah.
I haven't listened to that. But anyway, he and his wife, Cindy, they talk about not only actually, I don't think they talk about much comics at all. They just talk about life in general.
Okay. Jesus, Ray. This is sounding very boring. Like what? Like we're thinking about putting the kids in a new school. Who's going to do the dishes? Like,
anyway, if you're a fan of Colin Bunn, it's worth a listen at least, you know, one or two episodes. Give it a go.
Sure.
Not too long, maybe an hour and a half.
Okay, it feels like a long time to hear these two talk. Like, sort out your marriage in private is my advice. Like, honestly, that feels like that's not a podcast about anything. That's just nothing.
No.
That's almost like, right. Are they going to sit there and they're going to start talking? It reminds me of Kramer in Seinfeld. He goes, when he does the show in his apartment, he goes, and that's when I made the switch to generic beans.
Well, it could well, they could well be talking about cuisine. Who knows?
I'm not going to be listening, Ray. I'm sorry.
No worries. Look, I'll report in how things are
landing. Did you bring this news item to us?
I did.
This is me. I'm on the news beat, and this is me by a long way. But one thing I would write in is I would be interested in his process for... Because one thing I'll say about Colin, but much like Stephen King, I'm not the biggest Stephen King fan, but I admire how prolific and successful he is. As a fellow writer, I think he's someone to emulate, really. I honestly do, and I'm not his biggest fan. I've certainly enjoyed a lot of his work. Colin Bunn also, his sheer output, it's up there with like the Chuck Dixons, the Bendises. And yet I don't think he's quite achieved the same heights, but he doesn't stop him from pumping it out. Now, I do recall he's got a creator-owned series called Six Gun, which is very good.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's Colin Bunn. I've read quite a lot of it. It was a few years ago. I think he sort of slowed it down when he got all his Marvel work.
Yeah.
But I can tell you what, I read a good 40, 50 issues.
Look, I think because they're kind of reined in a little with the big, like if they work for the big two, it kind of hinders them a bit. So I'm glad to hear that he's creator-owned stuff.
Yeah. Also, I believe at Aftershock Comics, he writes some. I actually think probably it's better than his Marvel stuff. It's a bit like Jeff Lemire. Jeff Lemire gets a lot of fucking praise. I think he's like big two stuff's quite ordinary. Yet his indie work seems a lot better.
His indie work's great. Yeah, his Moon Knight. Look, I've got to again say his Moon Knight has been brilliant. Only 14 issues.
Sure.
And
I've read some of his other stuff though, which is not fantastic. Big two. Some of his X-Men was
his X-Men was, not was, great. Was look woeful. And I said that to Greg Smallwood. We had Greg Smallwood on the show.
Did you say that to him?
I said it was mediocre, but I said it on the pretext that, you know, Lemire had admitted this as well.
Sure.
He had said that opposed to the Moon Knight run, with the Extraordinary X-Men, Marvel had really tightened the screws on it for him, and he was only allowed to tell a certain story.
Yeah, that's a bit disappointing. And I will say this, though. I mean, his indie work, I'm not a fan, but it's got huge acclaim. And so much acclaim, I would say it's probably excellent, you know. Like,
it is good. Look, I'm probably going to ripple a few waters here, Dave, as well. Look, I'm a big Lemire fan.
That's fine, man. You can do what you want.
But I found a lot of his creator-owned stuff...
depressing.
It is depressing.
Why I don't bother with it. I just don't have time my day to be sad.
It's really well written. There is a melancholy to it, but there's a similarity in a lot of it. I'm not talking about Black Hammer. I'm talking about stuff like Royal City, Essex County, The Underwater Welder. These are big titles.
The day I will read The Underwater Welder is the day I hang myself. Yeah, like, well, I mean, it's honestly, pretty somber, I've got no fucking interest at all.
Yeah,
but then again, that's why he's a critical darling, because the masses, a certain segment of the comics population loves that kind of shit.
Mm.
So he feeds it to them, so good for him.
Yeah, you know? It's good, but I reckon it's good in small doses. When you get another Lemire run, that's again something about someone who's introspective and depressed
another
and sad.
Another think piece.
Yeah, but Black Hammer's very good.
Black Hammer, I want to check out. Black Hammer's actually only one that interests me.
Mm-hmm. It's good, very good.
Yeah, I mean, just the words "the underwater welder," I'm like, no thanks.
I think they're going to make a movie or something out of it. Would you watch it, Dave?
No, I won't watch it. I will certainly not be watching it. I wanted to actually quick break off the news. I noticed I want to do a shout out. Ed Brubaker's new show that he's done with the Drive director is currently on Amazon Prime. Too Old to Die Young.
Ooh,
believe it's about
vampires
and stuff. Yeah, it's just I've been really really waiting about Ooh. For it. He did an interview with John Suntress not that long ago on Word Balloon. Ed Brubaker, as you would probably know, is one of my favorite all-time writers. Yep. And he's written the show. He's a writer.
Yep.
And he's doing it with the director of Drive. So they're co-creators.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's got vampires in it. It's in LA. Like, it sounds really cool. It is on Amazon Prime. I checked it tonight.
What was it called again?
Too Old to Die Young.
Too Old to Die. Okay.
Cool. And also The Boys by Garth Ennis.
I've heard of it.
It's coming. I've not read it, but I do have it on digital, and I'm going to do it on the show.
Okay.
The first episode is coming, I believe, on the 27th of July on Amazon as well.
Okay.
And that is kind of like, I think, a pretty full-on, you know, it's an anti-superhero thing kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to throw those things out there. Now, RIP to Rip Torn from Larry Sanders' show on Men in Black.
Yeah. This is a bit sad.
A big presence.
Yeah, I mean, like, we spoke off-air as well, Dave. I'm mostly familiar with his name and his appearance in Men in Black.
He was good in Men in Black.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah, yeah, no, very, very good.
And
very
Larry Sanders Show, ever seen that?
No, I haven't seen it.
He was real. That's where I know him from. He was really good. He was arty. He was the... He was kind of like a showrunner, like Larry Sanders' showrunner. Excellent.
Okay.
Did things like rob the bank in his later years. Got really drunk, walked into his local bank with a gun, I believe.
Yeah.
Almost did time, but they actually dismissed it in the end. Like, he got away with a plea deal because he was didn't know what he was doing. You know?
Really? Yeah.
Oh, I think he was loaded out of his brain, man. Like,
Poor fella. He had a good innings. How old was he?
I think he was in his 80s. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No. He was a really interesting guy.
Yeah.
I think he worked with James Dean.
Wow.
Like he'd been in the industry a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just tell you, from Larry Sanders' show, if you ever watch it, fantastic show, and he's fantastic in it.
Okay.
Really good. Now, my last couple of weeks prior to doing this show was Alien Legion. Mm. I did a Jump Shots about it.
Yeah,
I just wanted to mention that the writer of that section was Chuck Dixon, and Chuck is going to be on Punisher Body Count, one of our affiliated podcasts, very shortly, I believe even this week. So shout out to Dane and Jake on that. Dane and Jake are both fantastic, and they've been circling Chuck Dixon for a while, and they've finally landed the whale. And I sent them a little jokey question, which I hope gets read out.
Oh, nice. But you've had Chuck on for...
We've had Chuck on three times.
Yeah.
And they've been struggling to get him on for once. Oh. I mean, Chuck's a big friend of the show.
Yeah.
And you know, he actually opens the show for us on our thing. Now, last night, we watched Robin Hood. Have you seen this with the new young guy from Kingsman? Have you seen the new Robin Hood movie?
Oh, is this the modernized kind of version?
Well, it's still set in ancient times, but
Jamie Foxx, isn't it?
Yeah, Jamie Foxx is in it, yes.
No, I haven't.
Jamie Foxx is okay, actually.
Yeah.
Look, Michelle really enjoyed it. I thought it was actually like a 7 out of 10. It made no money and got hammered by the critics.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, it wasn't a million miles away from, you know, when Guy Ritchie did Sherlock Holmes.
Okay.
Like, where it had a modern feel, even though it was a period piece.
Sure, I like Sherlock Holmes.
Me too. Like, what I'm saying is, it was like a bit like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was cheesy.
Yeah.
And I'm a big, big, big fan of the Crusades and of Richard Lionheart and stuff. I didn't like, and Robin Hood, what I love about the story is he went on the Crusade.
Uh-huh.
And so he was in like books like Ivanhoe.
Okay.
Ivanhoe goes into Sherwood Forest and meets Robin Hood. Like, Robin Hood had a bigger existence than just... was the sheriff of Nottingham's, like, you know, nemesis.
Yeah.
He actually went to the Third Crusade. And what I've always dreamed of doing is a movie set on the Third Crusade with Richard the Lionheart and Robin Hood there.
No, right.
Like, so them on the adventure.
Yeah, okay.
I reckon it would be fucking epic to do a proper Crusades movie, but have Robin Hood and Richard the Lionheart in it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I thought they were going to make that movie because it opens up in the Third Crusade they're there. And I'm like, oh... plug me in.
And
Michelle's going, you finally got your dream.
Yeah.
And I'm like, sadly, it only lasted one scene.
Oh,
but it was enjoyable enough. You know, like, I'd probably give it a 6.5 out of 10.
Okay, no, that's a decent, nothing.
Chucked it on
about.
A Saturday night.
Yeah, yeah.
I like the young guy from Kingsman. He's Robin Hood.
Okay, I haven't seen Kingsman.
Okay, well, he's also plays Elton John in Rocketman.
Edgerton or something. That's his name.
Oh, yeah, I'm not even sure what his name is. But
yeah, okay, yeah.
He's good. Yeah. He's good. He's got a lot of personality.
Yep.
The chick who played Marion was a sweetheart. Like, she's not going to win any acting awards.
Yeah.
I didn't really like what they did with Will Scarlet, and I didn't like that Robin Hood was anti the Crusades. In fact, I said during the show, this is really pissing me off that Robin Hood's anti the Crusades and bad trashing the king. He actually loves the Crusades and the king.
Yeah.
If you study the history.
So the writers, they kind of fell down a little.
Well, they just didn't care. It was just, they sort of tried to do a modern spin where, like, it was almost like, this is going to sound sort of stupid, but... like, when they were walking through wherever it was they were at the start of the Crusades, they were trying to make it look like a modern war movie, so they were all wearing, like, camo and bulletproof vests.
Yeah, yeah.
But instead of guns, they had bows.
But, yeah.
And it was a really conscious attempt to try to echo, like, now into then. Like, it was so obvious that it was kind of, like, a bit on the nose.
Yeah, yeah.
But I sort of got what they were trying to do.
Uh-huh.
The movie I want hasn't been made yet. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, no one's made the movie I want about Robin Hood and Lionheart.
The one with Russell Crowe didn't tickle
I fucking
your
hate that movie.
No, okay.
And nothing against Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
What I hate in that movie is he doesn't even go to Sherwood Forest till the end scene.
Okay.
And it's like, this is, as I was in the thing, and I was saying to Michelle, we're watching, I'm going, where are the merry men?
It's a big tease.
Where are the merry men?
Yeah, right.
Like, this isn't Robin Hood.
Yeah,
and there's nothing wrong with... I mean, I'm a big fan of Russell Crowe, but that was just not a great movie.
Yeah. Well, how about the big one? Sorry, Dave. The big one?
Prince of Thieves.
Prince of Thieves.
I love that movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves is...
bit of Brian Adams
is actually,
covered it, yeah.
Yeah, look, the original Robin Hood with Errol Flynn and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves is where it's at.
Oh.
You know, that's where it's fucking at.
Yeah,
the movie Ivanhoe, which features Robin Hood, I think he's played by, I forget the guy's name, not Kirk Douglas, it's someone like that.
Oh, an old movie.
Yeah. An old guy, yeah, okay. He's also good.
Okay.
Yeah, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves is fantastic.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, of course it is. And to be honest, they steal from Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves because Little John, in my reading of Robin Hood, was never a black guy.
Mm-hmm.
But in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, they made Morgan Freeman play the role.
Okay.
Remember from...
Oh, I can't remember. Okay, well, he did. Sure, yeah.
And in this, they did Jamie Foxx's that. I think it works really well.
As Little John, right?
Little John, okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah, he says his name's John. Like, he has an Arabic name, Arabic name, but he says the translation is John.
Uh-huh.
And I love that. I think that was a really kind of good callback to Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yeah.
No, I'm a huge fan of Robin Hood, and like, this movie didn't, like, hit on all cylinders, but it was still a bit of fun on a Saturday night, you know?
Didn't know about this about you, Dave. I didn't know you were a big Robin Hood fan.
I'm a huge Crusades fan.
Crusades, yeah.
And I'm a massive Crusades fan, and I've always enjoyed Robin Hood, yeah.
Yeah.
Rob from the Rich Gift to the Poor, man.
Are there any comics that touch upon this era?
Not that I know.
No, that you liked? And thought, no, okay.
I mean, I've researched, more than Robin Hood, I'm into the Crusades.
Yeah.
One of the main reasons I like Robin Hood is because he went on the Crusades.
Yeah. So there it is.
I dig that he's Robin from the Rich and given to the poor.
Sure.
But no, I mean, I'm obsessed by the Crusades.
Yeah.
On both sides. I'm not a religious guy, but okay, I just think it's a fascinating period of history. Yeah. I just finished another book on the topic, In Distant Lands. I won't bore everyone with that. But no, I mean, someone needs to do that movie.
Yeah.
Because the story of the Third Crusade is one of the most interesting crusades they ever did with Richard the Lionheart.
Mm-hmm. Richard the Lionheart, is that Richard the Third?
English king.
Richard the Third?
He's Richard the First, I think.
Oh, is he? Oh, okay.
Yeah, Coeur de Lion, like he's the first one.
All right, I know a bit of the War of the Roses.
But that's all later, man.
Later,
yeah.
Okay.
This is Richard the Lionheart, basically, just to give the pitch, was a king of England who pretty much was totally focused on recapturing Jerusalem. And so he went over there, and pretty much that's what he was doing. He was fighting against Saladin, who was the leader of the Muslims.
Oh, okay.
And eventually it really ends in kind of a tie. He doesn't quite get to reconquer Jerusalem, and he goes back home. There's scenes in a recent movie, Kingdom of Heaven, had Richard Lionheart dying when he was going back through Germany.
Okay.
But he basically was obsessed with that. And in the background, his brother, Prince John, was controlling the country. Mm-hmm. And leading it down a road to ruin, basically.
Oh, okay.
Kind of behind his brother's back because Richard Lionheart was obsessed with the Crusades. It's just a really interesting period, and I'm just surprised in this day and age. Now, Kingdom of Heaven, the director's cut, a mate of mine referred me to last night, and I picked that up today, so I'm going to watch that because apparently that he said that's the movie about the Crusades you want.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And Ridley Scott directed it.
Yeah,
you know.
There are a fair few things out there as well. The TV series as well, Nightfall.
Yeah, I've just started watching it.
Is that good? Or?
Well, it was interesting, yeah.
Okay.
But again, you know what annoys me?
Yeah.
It annoys me that takes place after the Templars have left the Holy Land.
Oh, so
I want stuff in the Holy Land. I want the war, dude.
Yeah.
I don't want the fucking back channel stuff back at home. I don't want a bit of that, but I want the war, dude.
You want the meat.
Yeah, I want the meat and the story. Give it to me. Like, I think it's like a good 5-6 season show.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And this doesn't come from a religious angle. This comes from, I want both perspectives. You know?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, anyway, like, don't worry, man. I'm going to write it, like, as well. Like, this is, I'm writing a story right now where there's a virtual reality and they're in the Crusades. Like, so I'm writing a story right now where in this virtual reality world, one of the chicks is obsessed with the Crusades. She's in the Crusades in the VR.
Oh, okay, right.
That's it's a little tidbit for free there.
That's a bit of a scoop.
For Des Moines fans.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, we'll get on this topic because I could go forever. Now, okay, so look, God, it feels like a million years ago, but Spider-Man Far From Home.
Mm.
Wow. Was it only last week I watched it?
Yeah.
It's blazed out of my memory. I can't say it hasn't lasted long in my memory. Like, I enjoyed it.
But you enjoyed it. Yeah, you enjoyed it.
No, I definitely enjoyed it. Yeah. Like,
did give a spoiler-free review, right, before?
Oh, Stu did, yeah. He had a...
Well, you gave a rating. I remember you gave a rating.
Did I?
You gave 8.5 because I remember because I actually gave the same as well. You asked
me. I think it was about an 8.5. Yeah. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I was gauging it off Captain Marvel. We watched that together, and we gave it an 8. And I thought I enjoyed Far From Home slightly more.
Yeah, just slightly.
Yeah, so 8.5.
I thought Captain Marvel was a little overrated with the political correctness crew, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, don't forget, she gave it 9.5. That's one of the biggest jokes of the Signal. I said to him, 9.5. Really?
Yeah.
Like, well, where did it lose half a point?
I mean, like, you know, the 90s element was great for me.
That was good.
That was good. But anyway, yes, Far From Home, yeah, really enjoyable. I found it good. We had a little bit of a chat about it. Look, I'm very much an action-orientated guy.
Sure.
Funnily enough, the action wasn't in the spotlight for me for this film. It was more the whole high school-y, you know, drama and stuff.
The European vacation element.
Yeah, I found that a lot more enjoyable. It was really fun. Had a lot of charm.
It had stacks of charm. It was a very light movie.
Yeah.
I mean that in the best possible way. He's a very good Spider-Man. I really enjoyed Happy Hogan being in it.
Mm, yep.
The interplay with him and Aunt May and stuff. And I love Marissa Tomei in just about anything she does. Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah, very good.
No, it was a light film. It hasn't lasted long in my memory.
No.
I did want to bring up the end stingers.
Yeah.
You know, the mid-credit.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
So we had the mid-credit scene with J. Jonah.
Yeah, how cool was that? Excellent. J.K. Simmons reprising his role.
I love J.K. Simmons.
That was such a surprise because who would have... But then again, it makes sense because it is still Sony, right? So...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, Stu was saying he had some quotes here. It was pretty much a perfect cameo from J.K. Love what they did to the character, make him a crazed internet video show instead of newspaper editor. Yeah, I like that as well.
Yes.
Yeah. You've got to go with the times a little bit. And you that do, suits him anyway. Perfect. I mean, he's a shock jock, basically. He's
perfect. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the other one that we had was the Skrulls and Nick Fury watching the beach on the VR.
Yeah. Well, actually, the Maria Hill and Nick Fury turning into Skrulls in the car first.
Yes.
That was cool. Actually, I don't know what your reaction was when I first was watching it.
I knew it was going to happen because I like to break stories down. The guy, one of the guys at work who watched it, I got him to tell me what happened in the end credits. And he's not a fan, so he just kind of said the turned into these green guys.
Okay.
But so I like that because it explained why Nick Fury was so easily fooled.
Yeah, because it wasn't him.
Yeah.
It was Talos.
He would not have been fooled by that.
So what are the implications for this, Dave? Because I was thinking about it and listening to other podcasts. Does that mean that Nick Fury has been off-world for a long time? Has he been off-world since the 90s, since Captain Marvel? So Nick Fury, who brought the Avengers together?
Well, I don't know.
Would that mean that that was Talos? That, you know, I could be way off the mark here, but
no, I think it's a decent guess.
Because when I first saw that second spoiler, I just kind of was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah. But then there must be something behind it.
I've got it, Stu. That's a very good point from you, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Stu, because I'll read out his, because, you know, Stu always goes deeper than me on this. Sure. Hey, dude, so... I was like the way I include that. Hey, dude, so given that Skrulls were Talos and his wife, and they seem to have permission from Fury, I was thinking of them as LMDs. That's life model decoy.
Yeah.
This could be Fury on the wall and heading into an original sin scenario.
Ooh,
man. That's what he's saying here. Or maybe just him in space to introduce Fantastic Four or the Phoenix Force for X-Men versus Avengers.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
Pretty good points from Stu.
I think Fantastic Four. I think actually to expand the whole Skrull world a bit more, which we might get more with Captain Marvel.
I'm kind of disappointed that they're not doing a proper secret invasion, though.
They're
making the Skrulls so fucking friendly. Why?
But that's only a band of Skrulls.
It's only a couple of
Skrulls. Yeah, yeah. So...
The real Skrulls are kind of pricks.
Yeah. Real, real bad people, you know?
Yeah.
So I like to think that it's only Talos. And look, I'm a big fan of Ben Mendelsohn, so I'm happy that he's a good guy. Yeah.
He's in Robin Hood, by the way. Plays the sheriff.
Really?
Yes.
Is he good, isn't it?
Oh, he's just normal Ben Mendelsohn,
yeah.
Like, he's like the... Michelle even said he's like have a character he played in Rogue One, just like the evil guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Have you seen Idiot Box?
About a billion years ago,
it's one of my favourite films.
He's a good actor.
He's a good actor.
I'm pleased with how well he's done in recent years.
Yeah. But anyway, so that spoiler at the end, I think there's a lot more to it than just the fact that Nick Fury is in space. I think it might imply that he's been there for a longer time.
I think that could be a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, Nick Fury was kind of sidelined after Winter Soldier. Wasn't he? Remember in Winter Soldier, he kind of turned up and there was a period where Samuel L. Jackson was saying, I'm not in it. They're not including him.
Yeah,
he was kind of quite vocal on the topic.
Yeah, because S.H.I.E.L.D. Imploded because it was infiltrated by
Hydra. And he said, "I'm going to go away for a while or something," didn't he? At the end of Winter Soldier,
and he turned up in Age of Ultron in the barn, talking to Tony. He was only peripheral. Who knows?
I think you're probably right. I think he's been. I don't know if since the 90s, but I think he's been away for a while.
Mm.
And I think that allows them to breathe some new life into the character too.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, just going back to the other spoiler, Dave, sorry, before we go, what did you think of this now implication of Spidey's identity being revealed?
That was quite shocking. And also the fact, that was quite shocking. And I think that leads well into a new movie.
Yeah.
I did read that Tom Holland's only got one more movie in his deal, but I'm sure they'll re-up that deal.
He's
going
to extend it. I'm sure. He's young. He's riding a huge wave at the moment.
Why would you give it up right now? He's loving it. You know, he could be so set for life.
Yeah.
If he keeps doing this. Like, he's very good. I feel like we've only just scratched the surface.
Yeah.
That's one thing I want to bring up, Ray. Do you ever think this? Like, this is why after Avengers Endgame, I must admit, I was pretty much emotionally spent.
Mm-hmm.
And it took, I was thinking, am I that excited for the next movie? And I went to see Spider-Man. It was a nice, refreshing, change of pace. But I sometimes feel that, at the end of the three movies, they sort of are ready to shut up shop. But I feel like we've only started.
Yeah.
We're only sort of halfway through.
Yeah.
Like, even with, say, Batman Nolan films, I wasn't really ready for that to be the end of the Nolan verse, but it was. Because the actors get paid so much, it's so hard for them, and, in quotes, so hard. Did you get that feeling sometimes that Marvel have been very good at stringing it all together?
I do. But I think with Tom Holland as well and Spidey, there's massive scope to extend that because he's so young.
Yeah.
Because if you think the movies are every 3 years, that makes. So it takes almost a decade to do three films.
Yeah. Unless they film 40 when he's hired, he's suddenly 50 or 50 plus. Yeah,
exactly. So Tom is what, 20-something? Or his 20-something, early 20s?
Yeah, early 20s.
So you give him another 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
Even 40. Pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So he'd be looking like Jake Gyllenhaal by that stage,
Yeah.
Definitely room for adding a few more in there. Cool. I'd like to see it.
I want to see the black suit. I want to see Venom.
So many villains, aren't there? I want to see Electro redone. I want to see Rhino redone well.
Mm.
They're just
so he was many... so terrible. One of the greatest actors of our generation, Paul Giamatti, given such a poor role.
I know.
He's terrible. One of the greatest actors currently working. He got given that scene.
Yeah.
That was just woeful. To be honest, I don't even hate that movie. I thought that movie was severely underrated.
Really?
Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, I bought the... I've got it on Blu-ray as well. And I thought, okay, look, I'll whip it out and I'll watch it. I couldn't get through it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I enjoyed it, man. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't mind those two movies. Really.
I like the Amazing Spider-Man more. I like the lizard in the first one. I thought that was really good. But yeah, still Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire. I rate totally up there.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
It's a very good movie.
Spider-Man 3 is very sketchy.
No, that's very sketchy.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you think of Venom?
Oh, the movie?
Yeah.
I loved it. I enjoyed it.
You're the second person who's come on the show who's really said they've enjoyed that movie. Yeah.
I love because you've got to, I think, well, I don't want to say how people should do it, but the way you approach it is how much you enjoy it. And if you approach it thinking it's going to be an Avengers Endgame or you're going to get a top-tier movie, you're going to be bitterly disappointed. Sure. If you're going to go there knowing, and this was, I had the advantage of retrospect because I'd heard other people talk about it.
Mm.
But if you go in knowing that Tom Hardy laps up the role, he just has fun with the role.
Sure.
It's a
great actor,
comical.
Too.
Yeah, and it's more of a relationship, a symbiotic relationship between him.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
It's actually aging well in my brain.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? When I saw it, I didn't hate it. I was kind of like, I don't know what I feel.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It definitely has a B-grade vibe to it.
About 800 million. It was a successful movie.
Yep. So we saw Cletus Cassidy as well. Yeah. Can't wait to see Carnage.
And surely we'll see him crossover with Spidey.
I'd love to see that.
It's got to happen,
I'd love to see it. There was a lot of speculation Tom Holland was going to be in
the film. I think that was a missed opportunity.
Mm.
I really do.
At least an appearance or some...
I actually think he should have been... There should have been some nod.
Yeah.
I think that would have been clever.
Totally agree. I mean, if they have Stan Lee in there... Then they're all in the universe, right?
Yeah.
So, but I really enjoyed Venom. Looking forward to Venom 2.
Well, that's good. Now, there was an interesting report from the Ankler online site. If Spider-Man Far From Home doesn't make $1 billion, Sony breaks free of the Marvel Studios deal. Now, I'm not sure. Have you... Now, apparently, that's $1 billion worldwide. Have you got Box Office Mojo there? Or, let's pull it up and see how close it is. This was a report from an industry insider that was basically saying that Sony, who have this relationship with Marvel Studios for the Spider-Man movies, would be looking to break free the deal if it doesn't crack a billion. Now, I think that Marvel Studios have been very beneficial to the Spider-Man box office success.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, because, like, there's just something about, like, there's just something about the Marvel Studios stamp of quality on a movie.
Yeah.
I think
look, that, people say it's formulaic as well, but, you know, they don't make no bones about it, you know?
Well, currently it's sitting on $635 million worldwide.
Okay.
$242 in the States, $392 foreign. So that's a very healthy, you know, $160 million budget. That's a very healthy outing so far, and it's only in its... That's not even counting the second weekend.
So that means that they don't break free from the Marvel deal, right?
If they crack over a billion... It's according to this report, yeah, if they don't crack over a billion, they will break free. If they crack over a billion, they won't.
Yeah.
So okay, it's still going. There's 635 and counting.
But doesn't it plummet, like, from what Stu usually says, it plummets quite dramatically subsequent weeks?
Yes, it does. But, I mean, there's also more foreign markets probably, you know, that they're counting on. Like, none of the Spider-Man movies... The Spider-Man movies, I think, since 2 in the States have steadily declined. Every Spider-Man movie since Spider-Man 2 has made less. This is the exception.
Okay.
So this has made 242. So... Yeah, it'll be watch your space. Don't worry, Signal and Doom will stay on the story. We're not fucking
finger
going
on the pulse. No, exactly.
We're not going away. What about this? Warner Media announces an all-encompassing HBO Max streaming service, including Batwoman, Katie Keene, and more. Now, we do know the DC Universe app looks like it might be going the way of the dinosaurs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, Swamp Thing was cancelled.
Yeah.
Warner's are building this new service, which is going to include Batwoman. It feels like the DC Universe service just didn't offer enough content.
I'm a little disappointed. Look, not being a DC person myself, I was looking forward to dipping my toe in the DC pool.
Sure.
Because that DC whole thing service, wasn't that part of the whole DC? Weren't they going to do comics? Like,
it has comics on there as well.
Yeah.
Well, much like Marvel Unlimited.
Yeah.
It's only US, it's US only.
Yeah.
Which is so frustrating.
It is very frustrating. That they are missing an opportunity there.
No, they are. And like, look, when I was in the States, I looked at the service and got like a free deal of it, like, you know, got like an insight into it. And like, they had plenty of content on there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't worth the money that they were pitching because the number of shows, I think it was maybe 130 US a year, something
like
that.
Whoa, really?
Something like that. Something, it was around that number, you know?
That's a lot.
When you think about it, they're up against Netflix. And, like, the only shows they had were a few new ones, but most of which haven't rolled out yet. Like, the solo Harley Quinn show hasn't even started yet. Swamp Thing got cancelled after one season.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
You know, Doom Patrol's a very good show.
Yeah, I've heard
of it. And Titans is very good. I've watched the whole season. Like, there's no real problems with the quality of the shows, but there's just not enough of them to support a whole service.
Yeah, look, so Warner's, what, are they going to do a HBO Max streaming service? That sounds pretty cool. Is that like Max, Marvel Max? Are we looking at darker content here, Dave? Or?
Well, I think it's, from what I understand, it's like a streaming service for, they currently have like a HBO streaming service, but this will have more stuff, so more Warner's product.
Okay. Who's Kate, what's Katie Keene? Is that?
That I don't know.
Okay. Otherwise, like a DC thing. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe she's. I don't know who Katie Keene is, actually. No. Batwoman is famously going to be played by Ruby Rose.
One of your favourite actors.
I think she's fucking hot. I'll be honest. I've always liked Ruby Rose. And I rate that she's an Aussie.
Yeah.
You know, is she the world's greatest actress? No, but like, I think she can do it. I watched the Arrow episodes and she was.
Did you? Yeah, I was about to ask. So, what did you think?
I thought she was fine.
I thought she was fine as well. Yeah, like, I mean, like, she...
I like Ruby Rose. I've always liked Ruby Rose.
If anything, I think her role, and not knowing too much about Batwoman, because
I know a fair bit.
But the character, she seems... She seems to be kind of just... It was a different universe, right? Anyway, so she was more driven, darker, intense. Is that Batwoman in the...
The Batwoman character that I know...
Mm-hmm.
Is in the regular universe.
Yeah.
And she... I know what you're thinking of. You're thinking of the older version of Batwoman who was the one that Bruce Wayne married, I believe.
Okay.
Or something like that. But the one that she's doing, she's in the regular universe. She's a cousin of Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
Grant Morrison used her, but I think Greg Rucka and a certain artist used her very well. And her father is like a military guy.
Uh-huh.
And he drills into her. So she's a socialite.
Yes.
She was a girlfriend of Renee Montoya in 52.
Okay.
She's an interesting character. I know quite a bit about her. I've read quite a bit of her. I think Ruby Rose is a pretty good choice.
I don't think she's done anything bad with her performance. There were, you know, small performances, but she fit the role.
She's a bits and pieces actor. She's mostly there on her looks. We all know that. She's an actress, model, whatever. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I've always liked Ruby Rose, and I say God bless her.
Yeah.
You know, I hope it works out well, and I'll definitely watch the episode.
I'll give it a go as well. Yeah. Why not?
God, sometimes you've got to take a punt.
Yeah.
You know, and exactly. she was in Orange is the New Black. She had to lose a strong Aussie twang.
But she's done as Batwoman. It's not there
at all.
Yeah,
she has. We'll see what happens. Now, Mad Magazine is shuttered.
Mm-hmm.
Ray, did you have any memories of this magazine?
I did. I had a lot, actually, when I was a young wee lad. Mm-hmm. I used to collect it a lot before comics. Actually, I collected a lot more than comics before I got into it. Loved the old Spy vs. Spy.
Yes,
that was my
that.
Main one. And actually the parody of the films.
Yes.
I remember Aliens with Sigourney Weaver. That was, I remember the issue I got with that. That was hilarious.
It was a very satirical magazine.
Very good art as well.
Yeah.
Very good art.
Very good at the parodies. That's what I remember
too. They were
too.
Very good, Naked Gun, I think, believe, or Flying High.
I always remember them feeling like they're a little too old for me. Like, when I read them, I was a young guy, and I was getting all my cousin's copies or an older brother of a friend's copies.
Yeah.
And I sort of got the humor, but I also felt like I wasn't kind of mature enough to really grasp the satire of the situation.
Yeah, I kind of got the sense of that as well with my friends back in the day as well. If you wanted to take it to the next level, we would go read a couple of Viz magazines. Remember Viz?
Not really, no.
Oh, okay. They were kind of, you know, a bit more graphic.
Right.
A bit more profanity in it as
well. Sure.
So as a young, you know, whippersnapper, that was quite the risky thing to get. But Mad magazines were kind of a staple. But yeah, you're right. We did think that, okay, this is for an older audience.
Yeah.
So we kind of felt
it was interesting, though. It was also very American.
It was very American.
Yeah, and I floated around my periphery because I must have had cousins, and I must have had a friend who got it because I remember reading quite a few issues, and I quite enjoyed it. You know what I mean? And I'm sad to hear it's gone, but you haven't heard much of it in recent years, have you, really?
No. So it's only gone now?
It literally, so DC own it, okay? And DC, which I didn't know until I heard the reports coming out, and they've owned it for a while.
Oh.
If not forever, they may have actually always had it. But anyway, they've shuttered it now. Yeah, as of in 2 months' time, they're just closing it out now.
Yeah, because I'm talking about, I remember about 86, 87.
That's what I've been thinking of too, yeah.
That's a long time that they've been around, yeah.
Yeah, they lasted a long time. I mean, I think they started in the 60s, man.
Yeah, okay.
So it's way back then. They were definitely huge in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, wow.
I think that was kind of their peak period.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, who can forget that famous face, you know?
Alfred E. Newman.
That is so iconic.
Yeah, What Me Worry, I think, was his cat's cry.
Yeah, and in that sense, though, he's got to be one of the biggest icons coming out of sort of comic books. You know, he's up there with, really, in terms of his social penetration, he's up there with a Batman or a Superman, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's penetrated widely, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
More than many comic book characters, you know?
No, for sure. And one of the, a lot of the listeners that were fans of Mad Magazine would remember the old folding back cover where you can actually
they
were so innovative. I thought that was, and again, kudos to the art. The artwork in that magazine, phenomenal.
Yeah, it was. It really is. It's sad. And just tying into that, Ray, what did you think about Vertigo being shuttered? This was also shuttered by DC as an imprint.
Yeah, look, again, I'm not big on DC or Vertigo. Not big, but I mean, I'm not unaware.
Sandman.
Yeah.
But
that is a big thing, isn't it? I mean,
huge.
Isn't Vertigo kind of like the Max titles for Marvel?
Yeah, pretty much. It was created by Karen Berger as kind of a place to do sort of slightly more adult-orientated stuff. They famously did Sandman, quite a bit of Grant Morrison stuff like Invisibles, 100 Bullets, Scalps.
Yeah.
It all plays for a slightly more mature audience.
So this is now going to be implemented in the DC universe now?
Yeah, basically what they're doing is they're shuttering the Vertigo imprint, which I personally feel is a mistake.
Yeah.
Because I think it had a lot of goodwill, and so they're sliding it around into other imprints. So those books will still get published.
Yeah, but what do you think?
Just have a DC banner on them.
Okay. How about that? Because Black Label is...
They've got Black Label. They've got Gerard Way's Young Animal.
Mm-hmm.
Bendis has got an imprint.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. I think part of the reason was that the contracts that they used to offer were more attractive than what they offer now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Vertigo deal wasn't attractive to a creator who could take their project to Image. And they weren't willing to compete.
Okay.
Which I find is such a mistake.
It is a bit of a mistake.
A huge mistake. Like, yeah. Why The Last Man was huge for Vertigo. Mm. Like, why not offer better conditions to creators to get them to come to your organization?
Totally agree. And again, being a mere novice at this, Vertigo as a label as well is quite pronounced. I think, you know, just looking on the shelves and stuff.
Yeah.
Whether you know it's part of DC or not, it's a label unto itself.
Yeah.
And with that gone,
mm.
I feel that you're going to lose a lot of people that are...
Well, it was huge in bookstores.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff like, say, Alan Moore's Swamp Thing and Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol that weren't originally Vertigo got shuttered into that imprint as they realized that was the audience. It was a huge bookstore audience. Yeah. And believe you me, it kept me connected to comics when I was almost out of comics, you know, because you were like... This sounds elitist, but you're kind of, these are the comics that it's kind of like cool to read.
Uh-huh,
this isn't just Spider-Man 405, you know? Yeah. This is a bit more highbrow, was kind of what their pitch was.
No, but you know? Totally understand. And totally, I can see a lot of people thinking that way as well. Like, if I need to jump into comics and it's such a vast, you know, universe, where do I go? Vertigo. I'm an older, you know, I like the more adult stuff.
And you want to read something that starts at issue one. We had Dion on the show. It's so hard to tell a guy like him to start reading Spider-Man or start reading Iron Man because he's like, well, where do I start? Whereas the Vertigo can go, well, here's Why the Last Man. Absolutely. Here's Volume 1.
Absolutely.
It goes for 60 issues. They're all in hardcover trades or just trades, hardcovers or trades.
Yep.
And you can just have it on your bookshelf like any other book.
Yep.
I've got plenty of Vertigo lying around for that exact purpose.
Yeah, exactly.
And there is a more satisfying feeling to having a story that starts, climaxes, finishes.
Yep.
As opposed to, this goes on forever, you know?
And there are threads of what had happened before, plus there are seeds of what happens later.
And there's endless
later,
retcons, you know? Like, when I'm reading 100 bullets, I don't pick it up, and suddenly this issue means that the previous 20 issues didn't happen.
Mm.
Which really, if you look between the lines in modern superhero comics, is what happens.
Yeah.
Every new creator, it seems, wants to do their own thing.
Yes.
And whereas the classic creators could come on and, like Chuck Dixon, picks up a comic... Reads, like, the previous, say, 10 issues, builds on that, does his own thing. It's like, why are we so determined to only have, like, 13-issue slots and stuff like that?
Yeah, no, it's true. It's become the way it has.
It's become the way, but I don't think it's the right way.
Mm.
Like, that's what I'm saying. That is the way it is, but I don't think it's the right way.
Yeah.
Really, personally. I think comics are eating themselves, like the superhero market. I'm more and more interested in sort of, like, the Image books.
Yep.
Marvel especially, I think, are guilty of it. I think Marvel are playing a fool's game.
Look, I'm just with Marvel. I'm just a little fatigued with the events.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I'm still happy playing in the Marvel sandpit. I do love a lot of the titles, but just stuff like
the endless events.
Yeah. Like, you know,
what's the event at the moment? War of the Realms.
War of the Realms. Look, I can't even compete.
I like Jason Aaron, but I can't be bothered reading it.
The amount of coin that you got to fork out for it is just too much. So it's just like, forget it. I'll read it later.
What do you do? Yeah, that's. I'm sure I ask you this question because you run up in Moon Knight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Is he playing in that War of the Realms?
Well, there's a lot of excitement from the loonies because Jason Aaron is very much, and on Twitter as well, he has stated that he's got a lot of plans for Mooney. Look, he's featured. He's just shown in the background during War of the Realms.
Group shots, which I don't count.
He hasn't really featured that I know of. Again, I haven't read War of the Realms.
Uh-huh.
But no, he hasn't played any major part. But Jason Aaron has said that he's got a story for Moon Knight.
And what do you think of Jason Aaron's Avengers? Are you reading it?
Yeah, I found it a bit of a slow start to begin with the Celestials.
It lost me at the start.
Yeah, but with the vampires and Blade coming in, I'm really digging it.
He's a very, very good writer.
He's good.
He very rarely lets anyone down. Like,
yeah, he's very strong.
I must admit I wasn't so enamored with his first arc of Avengers, but I know Jason Aaron always tends to bring it home. You know, he's writing Conan at the moment, doing a great job.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So he's doing a really solid job on Conan.
How's Jerry Duggan going on Savage Sword?
Not as good, but still quite good. I love Jerry Duggan. Yeah, Jerry Duggan's a friend of the show, actually.
Okay.
Jason Aaron sets the bar high. I enjoy Jerry Duggan's run. I enjoy Jerry Duggan's writing in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 7 out of 10 probably.
Who would you say at the moment currently would be top of the pile for Marvel writers?
Jason Aaron, easily.
Jason Aaron, Cates, no?
Oh, Donny Cates is probably the hottest.
Donny
Cates is definitely the guy on the spot. Yeah. Mm. I mean, Jason Aaron's been there a long time pumping out quality though.
Yeah, true.
Which to me he's like the Greg Rucka of Marvel, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Donny Cates is definitely the hottest guy on the block right now.
Well, he's done a lot. for Venom, I find. Yeah. It was really good. But he's dipping his toe in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Everyone has that moment, and Bendis was all played out at Marvel. Yeah. It's good to see a Donny Cates come on the scene, even though I'm not sitting around reading the books, just him to bring on that much energy and presence.
Yep.
Marvel needs that. Yeah, badly needs that.
It seems like they've got a little bit of a rat pack of their own at the moment. I think you've got your Donny Cates, your Chip Zdarsky.
Oh, I would not call it a rat pack. Something a lot lesser than the rat pack. Oh, yeah. The rat pack's like Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis, Junior Dean Martin. They aren't playing those roles. The only good member at Marvel who'd be worthy of being the rat pack's Jason Aaron.
Okay,
the rest of them, they're like the monkeys. Hey, it's the monkeys.
But there's definitely a band of guys that seem to be all buddies. Matthew Rosenberg.
Good for them, man. You know, Matthew Rosenberg I like. Matthew Rosenberg's Punisher is very interesting.
Yes, he's good. Bit hot and cold. His Multiple Man was, I found, terrible.
Sure. I didn't mind some of the stuff he's done with the X-Men.
X-Men's okay. I do like it. That's finishing up. Issue 21.
Yeah, because John Hickman's going to come on. So basically nothing matters on X-Men right now.
And it goes back to what you say. The writers will just reboot everything.
I actually feel sorry for Matthew Rosenberg because his X-Men has been okay to good. Nothing incredible.
Yep.
But
yep, agree.
Nothing's going to matter because Jonathan Hickman's going to come on and reboot it all.
It's ridiculous.
At least it's Jonathan Hickman, you know, someone who I actually trust.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's got epic scope and epic vision.
Yeah.
As opposed to these small kind of picture writers.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like a Grant Morrison. He's going to come on and give his own spin.
He's massively in depth with everything as well. Look, a big thing, I know you weren't the biggest fan of the Amazing Spider-Man run towards the end of Dan Slott, but here's Fantastic Four.
Mm.
I don't know if you've reading it already.
I've only read a couple of issues. Is it good?
Man, it is. I'd say that's probably close to one of my favourite titles.
I'll check it out.
With Al Ewing, Immortal Hulk as well. Sure. Really good.
We're too hot for Al Ewing.
Yeah, I know. Everyone's saying,
Al Ewing, well, the season single, he runs away, man. I don't know why, because I've only ever given him positive reviews.
He's a decent writer.
I've got a lot of time for Al Ewing's work. I'm trying to get him on the show, but I'm too hot. It's hilarious, man. That's what's happened in social media now, where people like, they're so scared of the trolls that they've seen trolls where there are no trolls.
It's a shame.
I have absolutely no interest in burning Al Ewing at all.
Not at all.
I actually think he's quite a good writer.
I've
only ever publicised it.
I just blame the trolls. You know, it deprives people
like
us.
It's just idiots on Twitter, man.
Exactly.
And they're fuckwits, and there's not that many of them either. They're just very vocal. So I just basically don't care anymore. I wanted to ask you this. What do you think of Robert Pattinson as Batman? Because this still puzzles me.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to get much press.
Is this a done deal?
I don't know. I'm hoping not. But, like, I think it... I have the impression it might be. What do you think?
I don't know.
It's very odd.
It is a bit odd. It's hard to say, isn't it? I mean, like, Heath Ledger set the bar of people not...
Heath Ledger was incredible.
Of not expecting any... Yeah, everyone panned it.
Well, Michael Keaton...
Yes, as well.
...got the role of Batman, he was known as a comedian mostly.
Yes.
And people were shocked.
Yep.
He was Mr. Mum, he was Beetlejuice, he was this and that.
Mm-hmm.
He was incredible.
Yeah.
And Michael Keaton since is incredible.
Mm, yes.
Heath Ledger, I would have had more faith in. I thought he... But as long as we knew he was a good actor.
Yeah.
He'd been in Australian movies and done very well.
Mm.
But Robert Pattinson has been in movies and been fucking terrible to my mind. That's what I'm saying. Like, everyone talks about his indie work, which none of us have seen.
I haven't seen it.
No one's seen it, man.
I've seen him in Harry Potter.
Was he in Harry Potter?
Yeah, Cedric something, Diggory. Okay. I don't watch Twilight.
Unfortunately, I watched them all because Michelle's a big fan. I saw every single one in cinemas.
Did you enjoy it?
No, I didn't enjoy it, right? It was a fucking slog. It's something you do for your relationship to just basically keep it going. By the last one, the only thing I was thinking of during the titles was, this is it. This is the last one. Fantastic. I was in a good mood for the last one. This is it. Part two of part seven. I was like, you got to the point where they're splitting up the last. I'm like, did we need to split the last book up just to draw it out a bit longer?
Is that what they did?
They did the last book as two parts.
Oh,
and it was just like painfully dragged.
Cash grab.
Yeah. It was a cash grab. Yeah, of course it was.
So Robert Pattinson as Batman.
Look, that's supposedly the casting.
Aesthetically?
Because
they're going for a younger Batman, right?
Yes. Matt Reeves wants a younger Batman.
I guess so.
The other guy who apparently was casting against him was the guy who plays Beast.
Nicholas Holt.
Who I also wouldn't pick.
No, I wouldn't pick him. No,
I'd pick Pattinson over him.
Yeah, I'd pick Pattinson
over him. Look, supposedly the guy can act. And we just didn't see it in Twilight because, I mean, that was a very poor product.
Yeah.
So, look, I'm open to it, I guess, but it still puzzles me.
I say get a no-name out there.
Yeah, well, that's what I would have thought,
too. Have them break out, have their breakout role.
Agreed. Yeah. Bill Sienkiewicz tweeted, Keanu would nail every one of Moon Knight's alternate personalities. Chill enough to be the cabbie, suave enough to be the billionaire Grant, cold and cruel enough to nail Mark Spector, indescribably badass enough to bring Moon Knight home. What do you think about Keanu Reeves' as Moon Knight?
Yeah, look, I think it would do the character a world of good, just getting that high-profile character
in
there. As whether or not Keanu can pull off all the identities...
Keanu kind of has a one-mode self-acting.
I'm not 100% sure. He can do Moon Knight, and he probably can do Mark Spector. The toughest one would be, for him, I think Jake Lockley.
He's a cabbie, isn't he?
The cabbie, because... He's got to be kind of street smart. He's got to be a bit of a wise talker, you know, a bit of jargon about him. I can't see that with Keanu.
Do you prefer when Moon Knight is kind of more insane or more when he's like the Chuck Dixon one where he was...
No, I do like him when he's more insane.
Yeah, you do, yeah, which is the more common version.
Yeah, Charlie Houston one, though. I love the stories, the series is where it explores his mental... state.
Sure.
But I still got to have me action in there as well. I've got to have him cutting the face off Bushman. I got him. Yeah. I'd love to have him,
Yeah, it was pretty full on in that one.
Yeah. Like, breaking his knees.
That was an intense run. I was reading at the time. I only knew about him because of Marvel Ultimate Alliance. And I went and I was buying a lot of new comics at the time. I was very kind of like adventurous. So I just picked up The Essential Moon Knight.
Yeah.
And then I picked up whatever the current Moon Knight was, which was that one, and it was interesting, very interesting.
That'd be chalk and cheese, right?
Yeah, it was. It made me think this is a character with a lot of complex. Yeah. And in my past, I'd come across a treasure trove of Mark Spector Moon Knight as well from like the 90s.
Yep.
And that was also very enjoyable.
I love that. Well.
I find Chuck Dixon's run incredibly good, actually.
It is very, and with Sal Valuto in art.
Yeah, Sal Valuto on art, it's fantastic.
A legend.
Why isn't that in trade?
It should be.
This is very good. Yeah. That crossover did with Punisher and Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was a big one. And they it's hilarious. They had Wolverine on the front cover, but basically saying, we're adding Wolverine because we know his name sells.
Yeah.
That's what it literally said on the cover. So in the 90s, I'm surprised. Well, he had Ghost Rider in there as well. Yeah. So Mark Spector was, during that time where Punisher, Ghost Rider, Spidey, Wolverine were hot items. Mm.
They're still pretty hot items. They're just mismanaged right now.
Yeah,
I mean, don't get me started on how mismanaged Wolverine has been in the last few years.
Have you read Exit Wounds, the latest?
Yes,
one?
We did it on the show last week.
Oh, was that good or?
The Larry Hama story was excellent. Chris Claremont's is more of a bit of a think piece, and the last guy's one is just like a little cartoon.
Okay,
it's pretty. Look, Larry Hama's story is pretty good.
I've got it on digital. That's why.
It's worth a read. It's worth a read.
Okay, because when I listened to your show, I hadn't read it yet. But sure.
I don't, these days now, I'm just a hollow, soulless guy. I don't give a fuck about spoilers or anything now. I'll say to people, just tell me the end. Because I might be dead tomorrow. Just tell me the end. They're like, it's going to ruin it for you. I go, no, it won't. Because I'm an adult.
But then you want that.
Oh, no, reveal. I like data. I'm like data. Just give it to me now. Yeah. So when Stu was like playing cutesy with like what happened with the mid-credit spoilers, I said, Stu, just tell me.
I remember you asked me, I can't remember what movie it was. You said... You asked me, Ray, is there a spoiler at the end? And I said, no, there isn't. Don't worry. Yeah.
Disappointing. that's just the way it is, man. I've got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about actual people going out and doing the vigilante thing, a.k.a. Kick-Ass? I'm surprised more people aren't doing this. Adam the Computer says he has this really lame superhero who lived near him, I think called Shadow Hair. Yeah, it was really lame.
Someone real life living near.
There was someone I researched on the internet after Adam told me. Yeah. Someone I was in Connecticut, I think, was going out there being like a superhero at night.
Right. Wow.
But whether it was more just of a publicity thing,
okay.
But what do you think about guys just taking to the streets, man?
Sometimes, life and crime get to a point. You hear the news. There's a lot of really... I can't imagine... Yeah. My sister was telling me the other day, I can't believe the amount of stabbings there are in Sydney. On the news.
Yeah.
She's from Melbourne. So, overseas listeners, she's from down south across the border.
Right.
Interstate. And the big crime there in Melbourne are these band of Sudanese
Oh, yeah, I've heard
gangs coming in, breaking into your homes.
I've heard about this.
Physically harming you and just ripping off all your stuff.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff gets me kind of fired up to say, yes, there should be someone.
Yeah, I agree.
There in a balaclava, ski mask.
Yeah.
Taking justice to them because, yeah
I agree. I 1000% agree with you, Ryan.
Yeah. But, I mean, obviously.
What about Punisher level? Punisher's not fucking around.
No. What, did you hear about that thing recently? Actually, this was hot off the news as well about the American cops. Citing for solidarity, they're asking everyone, like these other cops, to wear the Punisher skull. Oh,
yeah, I heard there was a lot of feedback. This is a big news item on the Punisher message boards.
Mm,
yeah, okay. I try to get involved because I've really got no problems with it at all. Like, and a lot of people do, but I'm like, yeah. I don't, dude, as far as I'm concerned, crime is a disease and he's the cure.
Yeah.
So the old tagline was,
very aggressive cure.
If society won't punish the guilty, he will. And that's always stayed with me.
Yeah.
So I'm the guy who read Judge Reddit for 20 years and never thought it was satirical. When someone said it was a satire, I was like, it's a satire? I thought he was in the right. So I'm that's me, you know. Mm. My response is rapid response.
Yeah. Look, I'm just trying to think of
I'm too old and too tired.
What are the downsides of having someone, like, you know...
Oh, well, civilian death. Civilian death.
Civilians, crossfire.
That's it.
All that sort of stuff. Well, yeah.
That's it. Like, but don't forget down in local environment, Hornsby. Did you see the cop took a shot at the guy from literally as far 2 meters away, and she missed and shot the old woman? That was a policeman, and there was a photo of her. There was a video of her, and her hands were shaking. And it's like maybe she shouldn't be the one to take the shot.
Yeah.
And the guy had a big knife, but he was mental, you know. Yeah. And she took the shot, and shrapnel hit some of the ladies, the old ladies over at the fruit stand.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
But that's a cop.
Yeah, that's a cop.
Like, how is that a cop?
Like gun training.
Gun training, yeah. Should we have decided she's the one to take the kill shot? You know what I mean?
Whatever happened to tasers? Don't they have tasers these days where they incapacitate people?
Look, they had no idea what was happening. And this guy had a knife. He was walking around the fountain with a knife. And
this was at Hornsby, right?
This was at Hornsby.
Yes.
And, there's video of the lady. You could check it out. And her hands were shaking. And she looked like she had no idea.
Oh, God.
And she took a shot and she hit some old women standing by the fruit stand. And then she's like, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
What is going on, David, around Hornsby?
There was that guy with a knife.
Need a punisher, don't
they? They do need a punisher. There was that guy with a knife who came and killed basically his ex-wife was going on a date with a guy that she met on like a dating site.
Yeah.
First date. Okay, the Korean barbecue place, which I have passed many times. I take Michelle to the place next to it.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're sitting there having their first dinner of all time. Yeah. Okay. This ex-husband turned up, grabbed a knife off the side of the table, stabbed the guy in the neck, killed him. And then also hurt the woman who was his ex-wife. Oh. Didn't quite kill her. And
terrible.
That's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And then he basically put his weapons down and got arrested.
Yeah.
So, crime is real and we joke, but it's out there, man.
Mm.
And if someone was going to take it to the streets, I'd sleep more comfortably. Seriously, I would. Because I'm not out there causing fucking mischief.
Mm.
You know, nothing good happens at 2, 3, 4 a.m. out there. You know?
Dave, what do you reckon? What about Neighbourhood Watch? Can't we band together as a community?
I've actually said to Stuart the other day, like, we should start off Neighbourhood Watch. And he's like, 2 weeks in, Dave, you'd be taking it too hardcore. Can you imagine it, man? I'd fucking love it.
I can imagine it. Like nail planks, like cricket bats, actually.
Yeah, and like, where you going, kid? Past curfew. 7 or 5 p.m. Anyway, have you got this thing in here about Mulan? Is this you?
Yeah, I checked
this
that
is
in
pretty
there.
Weak.
Yeah. Look, I'm trying to fish for news here, Dave.
Yeah, so I looked at it, I was like, is this me fishing for news?
No,
there's a movie coming, isn't
it? There is. Look, my first attempt was the Bungalow Cullen Bunns podcast.
That was all right.
The second one is Mulan. I saw the trailer. I'm not sure if you saw the trailer. You know how Disney are doing live action.
I
did,
but I knew they're doing live action.
Yeah. So this looks actually pretty cool.
I did see the original back in the day.
I haven't seen the original. But apparently this live-action one's going to be more true to the what I understand the original text, traditional text.
Yeah, Disney took a few liberties, I believe, with the 90s version.
Yeah. So, so this looks really good. Action scenes look awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So looking forward to this.
I'll definitely catch it. I'm in general a bit of a consumer of Disney product.
So have you caught all the other live... You saw the was it Aladdin, didn't you, right? You saw
No, I haven't seen
it. No, you didn't. I thought you and Stu had a little...
No, we had a wager, but my Michelle's cousin went and saw it, so I asked her. Okay. I asked him actually if to settle our bet, and he gave me the answer. Stu actually won that bet.
That was the Robin Williams.
Would there be a Robin Williams cameo, which I felt quite confident there would have been.
That would be interesting.
Robin Williams cut a lot of footage that they didn't use.
Actually, you're right. That, and he made that kind of thing, didn't he? So,
but Stu won that round. That was a bit of loss for me. That was kind of like, but you have to take that loss in the gut.
Yeah,
you know?
That's it. I mean,
you've
got to lose a few to win some.
Exactly. So. It was one of our oldest bets, man.
And what was it? Dumbo. Did you see that?
No, zero interest in Dumbo.
So you like the Disney stuff?
Yeah, I like Disney, but that's not my... Okay. No, Aladdin's more my cup of tea. Aladdin. When Aladdin comes out on streaming, I'll definitely watch it. Yep.
And Lion King is a big one coming
up. Yeah, Lion King, I'm very
interested. That looks good.
I love the original, and I think the new one looks awesome too.
Yeah, Seth Rogen.
Jungle Book was them as well.
Jungle Book, yeah.
I loved Jungle Book.
I really enjoyed that as well.
I thought it was... I went in with kind of low expectations, even though I loved the original.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love Jungle Book.
Yeah, me too. Ethan and I, we went and watched it. Pleasantly surprised. I never saw
a lot of them I'll catch on streaming now. I'm seeing those in cinemas. But Aladdin will watch the second it hits streaming, for sure.
Yeah.
Why not? I like Will Smith.
And
Mulan,
yeah.
Mulan will definitely watch as well.
It looks good. It looks good. Anyway. Yeah. Disney, they're churning them out, aren't they, now? They're
ruling the world, man.
They are.
Now, you've got here Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things. She's the girl, yeah?
Eleven. She's the main one.
Reportedly being cast in Marvel's The Eternals.
Yeah.
Zero interest in The Eternals. Can you change my mind?
Look, I can't, Dave. I'm not the biggest fan of the Eternals, but look, it's a Marvel
Who
film.
Who is?
So to me, this is what maybe the Guardians of the Galaxy was like. Yeah, no one had any interest in it.
No one cared.
Did you follow Guardians before?
Not at all.
Okay, I followed them a little, so I knew a bit more about them, and I was a little bit more excited than most people.
Right.
For the Eternals, I have no... baseline.
I know who Eros is, and I fucking can't stand that character. He turns up in like Avengers and stuff.
Star Fox, yeah.
Yeah,
Star Fox.
I absolutely loathe that character.
I do like Cersei. I don't know if you've...
Cersei or Icarus, no.
Oh, Cersei is awesome. She was in the Avengers in the 90s. This is the realm I live in. But anyway, she can manipulate substances on a molecular level. So she's pretty damn powerful.
Sure.
So she can basically like turn you into a rabbit or something like that. Right. She can just do whatever she wants. Okay. Icarus, I think he's a bit of a bruiser. I'm not too sure.
None of this sounds that great though.
No, I don't know.
Eros sucks.
I
can't stand him.
Yeah, I'm getting, unfortunately, I'm a little scared that this might go down the route of the Inhumans. Like the TV show.
Yeah, that was a huge failure that they quickly moved on from as well.
Yeah, they might want to look at maybe rethinking bringing the Eternals. There's so many other things. Like everyone, we're all hankering for the Fantastic Four, X-Men.
And X-Men is not going to be one movie. They're going to make X-Men into multiple movies. Like, focus on that kind of stuff that we want to see.
These are the tent poles that the MCU has.
Give me more Punisher as well. Give me Moon Knight. Give me Blade.
Or give us more of that, like, say, Ghost Rider on Hulu, or give us more TV series. Like, if the Punisher...
Give me definitely more Ghost Rider.
Yeah, if they don't work onto the big screen, get them onto the TV shows.
Give me another Punisher TV show.
Yep, exactly. But Eternals...
Eternals suck. There's my review. Eternals suck and have sucked for a long time.
Well, look, think about the cosmic stuff that we're going to have. We're going to have, like, Silver Surfer, right?
Yeah, good. That's good cosmic as opposed to shit cosmic, which is what Eternals is.
Yeah, so I don't know.
I'm not going to, I get tired of like being the hype man.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be the hype man for Eternals.
But Dave, Angelina Jolie, she's in
what?
It. She's in the Eternals.
Okay, well, there's one bit of interest from me.
So they reckon that she might be, speculation that she's Cersei, which I reckon she'll be great.
I do like Angelina Jolie.
Yep,
I've always been a fan of Angelina Jolie. That's some news that
I'm not sure if she is, but I think it's locked in.
Okay,
good. And then you've got this Millie Bobby Brown, who's a big name at the moment.
Yeah, but I'm not excited at all by that.
No, I know. But like, she'll bring in bums on seats.
She will. She's fine in Stranger Things. Okay, well, we'll watch this space. We'll see what happens. But as I said, give me Ghost Rider on Hulu. Give me Blade. Give me Punisher. Give me X-Men multiple movies. Give Ray his multiple man movie.
Yes.
Yes. I knew that. I gave that one to you, Ray. There. I threw you a bone there. What did you hear about this? Just one last thing on Vigilante Justice. Did you hear about Jeffrey Epstein? He's a financier in the States.
Yes.
Who got done on sex trafficking charges years ago. Pled out. He's now been rearrested. This is one guy who needs to take a gunshot to the back of the head in an alley.
In the alley.
And this is after they extract every piece of information on him that they've got. Because he's, I tell you what, this guy's an absolute monster.
Right.
And this is a modern day monster. I was talking about him with Chuck Dixon. I said, this guy is a poison.
So what's happened? He's out again, is he?
No. He pled out in a very lenient plea deal back in about 2008. Served about 13 months in jail.
Yeah.
And came out. He's worth billions.
Yeah.
And he got rearrested on some of the same charges, and they're thinking the plea deal won't stick because they're saying he did crimes in different jurisdictions to where he signed the plea deal. He's currently in jail awaiting a bail hearing.
Yeah.
So, but what I'm saying is whatever happens in court, this guy is a monster. We're talking underage prostitution here at a massive level. This is about as bad as it gets from a guy who's got billions, unlimited funds, Ray.
Yeah.
So he could pay settlements and it's a drop in the ocean. You know what I mean?
This is where justice does not work. Right?
Yeah, this is where I say bring out the waterboarding and get every piece of information out of him, and then a gun to the back of the head as a reward. You know,
as a reward.
Yeah, that's it, man. I'm not fucking around anymore. Yeah, anyway, onto a lighter topic. We're just moving away from that. Geez, that was a bit of a diatribe from me. CB Sabowski calls out new Marvel writers on Twitter for job insecurity. He's basically saying it feels like writers coming to Marvel titles feel like they're going to be cancelled and toss everything at the wall. Yeah. Can anyone take anything CB, or should I say Akira or Yoshida, says seriously? Titles get cancelled sometimes before even an issue one is out.
Yeah.
If I was a freelancer working for Marvel, I'd be sweating too.
I'd have to agree as well. Like, yeah. I'm just citing, look, we talked about Jeff Lemire before.
Sure.
He had The Century, a very underrated series of The Century.
Sure. I enjoyed what I read.
Yeah. Five issues, that was.
Yeah.
Now, the interviews I read with Jeff Lemire... promoting it, it was going to be an ongoing series.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, bang.
They don't have much faith in their own product. That's the problem. Mm. I'm not talking about the writers. I'm talking about the higher marks, the editorial or above.
Yeah.
I think the problem is they're really bought that thing about number one selling more. Number ones can't be selling that much more now when they're so frequent.
And you're not going to sell something to the same ilk of Batman or Spider-Man with the likes of The Century. You know, or like Moon Knight, or these lower tier
titles. I tell you something, one way that you can build titles on a lower tier character, and look at a Birds of Prey that Chuck did, okay? Mm-hmm. By building a title over many issues and building in a reader base, you grow it slow. You're not, if he'd done Birds of Prey as five issues, it would have sold very minimally because, like, you're not building enough. You actually draw people in.
100%. You don't give readers the time to invest in the characters and stuff. It's like
Marvel, love reading a long run, you know?
Yeah, but it's like Marvel trying to sell you this product, but they only have 5 minutes to do it. You're not going to be sold on it.
No.
So, totally agree. But I think that, unfortunately, again, that sort of format is gone by the way of the dodo, hasn't it?
Like, it has, but I don't think it's right, though. Like, I feel like...
No, I don't think it's right.
I think there should almost be... Like, look at Disney and Warner's.
Yeah.
They're worth... billions upon billions, if not trillions, you know? They can easily carry a loss leader.
They could. I remember you and Stu having this discussion as well. Yeah. Some you make some losses in some of your avenues, right? Yeah. But it's all for the betterment of the holistic...
Well, surely what they bring in on licensing alone must dwarf whatever they bring in on comic book sales.
Mm.
Think of what a character like Spider-Man or Batman is worth in terms of, like, on fucking lunchboxes and on everything else. Like, it's billions of dollars, man. Yep. Yep. This is what I don't think is quite getting piercing through.
Yeah.
And clearly they're given a small budget. And Marvel seem to have a very short-term view of how they make comics. They're constantly responding to... They're trying to be man on the scene, but instead they're always like 5 minutes behind the scene. Because you really should be creating your own scene.
Yeah.
If you're really serious about what art you're putting out, it's not just all in response to what you read in the news.
Mm.
You've got to have some level of input yourself.
Yeah.
No, I'm not a fan of that kind of style. And I think if I was a new writer at Marvel, if that was my only paying gig, I'd be insecure too.
Of course.
And I'd be trying to hit the ball out of the fucking ground.
Absolutely.
Of course you would. Like, that's actually good.
Yeah.
Like, that's actually good. CB, for me, I'm on the fence with. You know, he hasn't been in the job long, so I'm going to give him some time.
Give him some time,
But I don't like this thing where people get series greenlit and they cancel before even issue one comes out based on small pre-orders. I'm like, you haven't given them a chance.
Yeah.
Give them 10 issues. See if they can build the title. That can definitely happen.
And this is what really kind of confuses me. Because, again, you know, what we're discussing, I'm going back to... this interview again that we had with Greg Smallwood back. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me after the Moon Knight run, okay, he and Jeff Lemire, it did pretty well. It lasted only 14 issues, right?
Sure.
Not long.
It was a good run.
It was a good run, critically acclaimed. He and Jeff Lemire then went back to Marvel to pitch them another idea. I do believe it might have been the Midnight Suns,
right,
which you would have may have seen bandied about on the internet. But Marvel didn't pick up on it. And because they're worried that if you create a team of a writer and artist that builds some sort of reputation, then that writer and artist will go to the likes of Image and stuff and just, you know. But it doesn't make any sense, you know.
Stupid.
Because why wouldn't you use the best talent out there that has done good for you and actually build something?
Who's just coming off a run that's pretty hot. That at least had critical love on it, that run. I don't know how it didn't sell, but definitely had critical run. Critical heat. Yeah, no, well, that's the short-sightedness of a corporate structure.
What did DC do? Like, do they...
I don't know.
Is it the same? Like, no, you're saying like the Birds of Prey have a longish comic.
Oh, but that was back in the day, man.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
Looking at some DC that I cover, I mean, like Tom King has his selected artists he uses and he's had long runs with. I think DC are probably doing a slightly better job. They pay better as well.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
I don't know the inner workings, but I can tell you about looking at Tom King, he has like Clayman. And then Mitch Gerard's guy, they do a lot of his Batman for him. So it seems like he's definitely got a relationship there.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Snyder and Capullo.
Yeah.
Look, I think Marvel, they have this fear, but it's like if they just look past that fear, they could actually build up a lot of loyalty with an audience.
Yeah.
Because really, if you're going in to the comic store every month,
and
either you're buying in trade or you're buying single, whatever you're doing, you're still in responding to a product. I don't just walk in now and go, I'll buy whatever Spider-Man there is. No, I want to know who's writing it and probably who's on art and have some sort of general idea.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because there's so much product out there.
Yep.
And
you've got to hone in your interests. Yeah, right? You can't just blindly.
No, definitely everything. Not. And unfortunately, they don't seem to realize that.
But again, in contrast to it, they tend to pick certain golden childs. Donny Cates, and they put him on so many titles because they know he's a good writer.
But I also think they put him on too many. At once.
Exactly.
You know. Yeah.
So what? I don't understand.
By the way, are you enjoying the Clark Kent David here with the glasses on? Like,
oh yeah, David, you're sporting a new look.
Yeah, sporting a new look. Clark Kent. Do you even know it's me?
Well, I'm wondering if you have Edith behind there somewhere, you know, controlling some drones.
Bit of AI. it's a tale as old as time. If I had C.B. Sobolsky on here, I would definitely grill him a little bit and just go, what's going on, C.B.? Yeah. Why are you not giving titles longer to breathe? Do you not have any faith in the product at all?
Yeah. And look, and if the answer is because the units don't shift enough, then they're not shifting enough at the moment, you know.
No. Yeah.
So why stick to this?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This model isn't working anyway. I mean, what did you think about, like, going to an extra... The Walmart experiment by DC. They were putting comics in Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Basically trying to replicate the experience of the newsstand, which you and I both had when we were growing up.
Yeah.
Back in the old days, you could walk into, like, basically any newsagent, and they'd have a few comics there.
Yeah.
And some places, quite a lot of comics.
Yes.
And to be honest, it was heaven as a kid.
I think it was great. And I think it's a good move by Walmart because...
Yeah.
There'll be those little kids, regardless of the type of store, Walmart, you know, I've heard, you know, those little kids will be looking forward to going to Walmart and checking out the comics.
Yeah,
I think that's a good idea.
I think it was a great idea, and they've just started to put those in trade now, and believe this week we're doing one of them. Batman Universe was one of the Walmart comics.
Walmart,
yeah, it was a Walmart, because Bendis was on it. And they're going to put that in trade.
Okay.
So the comic store owners who were so up in arms... It's coming into comic store anyway, just a few months later.
So they're up in arms because they don't have the first release.
This is the game DC play.
Yeah.
They really want to back into digital and into going into wider distribution, but they're still beholden to these comic store owners who need the product.
I get you.
So they were a bit up in arms saying, this is a Walmart exclusive. Well, it's now coming out in single issues a couple of months later. So is it, you know, really...
Yeah,
they're just trying to expand the audience.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
why not? Good on them. That's what's needed. Yeah,
that's what's sorely needed. Like, I miss the days where you could walk into a petrol station and they'd have comics.
Yeah.
You know,
but having said that, also as well, Dave, this generation and such with accessibility with digital, and everything, like it's a different experience. But
digital
young
is pretty
kids
cool.
are getting they're getting comics in. like, you know, cool. on their tablets and stuff.
Do you see them at uni reading comics?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. Like,
Oh, sorry, you mean the students? Look, no, I have very little to do with students. Like, okay. Sorry, listeners, yeah, because I do work at a university, but no, I don't see students that much.
No, I was just wondering, because I've asked you that question, because he's a teacher, and yeah, he does.
Okay.
And look, I embraced, I had a friend of mine, Dale, had a really good podcast called Paper King, which got me into listening to podcasts, a comic book podcast.
Yeah.
And his friend, who's on the podcast, Matt, he is one of the head honchos over at Comixology.
Oh.
And basically, through those guys, I hadn't even heard of digital comics. Uh-huh. This was a few years ago now. This is probably 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was on holiday with Michelle.
Yeah.
They start talking about these digital comics, and I'm thinking, can I get these on my iPad? Because I was on holiday.
Yeah.
And I don't realize what it was, and I thought, this is fucking great.
Yeah.
So you've seen my collection at home on my library collection. I've got another massive library collection on my iPad.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, when I'm sitting on the train, it's great.
It's fantastic. It is good. Look, you know, I very much love both. You know, I very much love these. I'm looking at your collection here now, Dave. I very much love these hardcover, you know, things that you can read in front of you.
Sure.
But at the same token, you're right. Digital is so accessible.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to read it on the train or, you know.
Yeah, on the commute.
You used to read a lot in the airport. You know, you got hours to kill. So
totally, man. Totally, it keeps it going around. Now, what about this? Dexter Fletcher, who directed Rocket Man, is tapped to direct Sherlock Holmes 3 with Robert Downey Jr. Oh. Guy Ritchie directed the first two.
Uh-huh.
Now, Warner supposedly wanted this film much earlier, but RDJ's Iron Man commitments delayed it.
Well, I understand the first two Sherlock Holmes did pretty well.
Oh, they made a lot of money.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the first one. Second one, actually, I don't think I've seen yet.
I've seen the second one. It's not as good as the first. It's still quite good.
I wanted to see it. Yeah, but look, I haven't seen Rocket Man.
I haven't either. But Dexter Fletcher, he didn't direct Bohemian Rhapsody, but he came in after Bryan Singer departed the project.
Oh, okay.
And did a very good job on that.
Oh, okay.
So he didn't get a directing credit because Bryan Singer still had the right to get directing credit under the guidelines. No, apparently Rocket Man's pretty good too. Yeah, no, okay. I'm definitely ready to embrace a third with Sherlock Holmes now that RDJ's out of Iron Man.
Yeah, me too. I feel I'll miss a bit of Robert Downey Jr. with no more Iron Man.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Love to see him in something else. And he was very good as Sherlock. So
he was great.
And Jude Law, both of them.
Jude Law's expected to come back as well.
Oh, good.
And you couldn't do it without him.
No.
You need that team. Now, what about this? This is very interesting. Todd Phillips expects Joker backlash because the film doesn't follow anything from the comics.
Yeah.
And here's the quote. "We didn't follow anything from the comic books, which people are going to be mad about. We just wrote our own version of where a guy like Joker might come from. That was what was interesting to me. We're not even doing Joker, but the story of becoming Joker. It's about this man." What's your view?
I don't know. I'll be very interested to hear your view. Look, I can understand that this will ruffle a lot of feathers.
I'm sort of open to it. Like,
are you? Yeah, look, yeah. I've got no attachments to the Joker. I think he's a great
character.
Very interesting. I've seen the clips for this, for Joker, and Joaquin Phoenix looks fantastic in it.
Joaquin Phoenix is an actor's actor.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of time for him.
Yeah, and Todd Phillips, I mean, the tone of the trailer, if that's what the movie's going to be, I think you're going to be in for quite a treat. As for the purists who see the Joker as the Joker, I can just see this being... There might be a bit of backlash here, Dave.
Well, I know my mate Dion, he's a big fan of the Joker, and he just likes the Joker killing and doing crazy shit, you know? And, if this is going to be more of a think piece, he might have a few problems, but I think an incendiary performance by Joaquin Phoenix could win people over.
Yeah.
If Joaquin Phoenix brings his A-game,
mm-hmm.
like he did in Walk the Line,
you
know, where he won an Oscar, where he played Johnny Cash, and he was fantastic.
Yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix, at times in his career, has just knocked it out of the park. He's turned up other times and been like a guy who can't play ball.
Yeah.
You know, Joaquin Phoenix, I think, on this project, is going to be dialed in, and I think he's going to deliver.
I think so, too. And I think Todd Phillips here has alluded to something that I kind of got the sense of when I was watching the trailer. I was telling one of my co-hosts, Connor, who I do the
shout-out to Connor, by the way.
Shout-out to Connor.
Legend of the game.
This is the other Connor. I mean, both of them are great legends.
I was throwing it out to both.
Oh, it's to both, yep. but this is Connor from Sons of the Dragon, Immortal Iron Fist podcast, and I do the Last of the Krypton, the Superman podcast with.
Yeah.
And we were discussing this movie, Joker, and the good thing about it is... the way I pitched it is you go into it and you just, you forget about it being about Joker.
Yeah.
It's about a guy, like a guy who just spirals
a
down.
Guy, they say you were all 3 days away from becoming Joker. Yeah. 3 bad days away from becoming Joker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's, let's say Frank Castle, you're 2 days away from.
Oh, yeah.
Joker's three.
3 days. Okay. that's a set time. Okay. Excellent. Excellent.
You've got to take the chemical bath.
Okay. You know? Yeah. Yeah. So you kind of head towards Joker, then you become Punisher, then you.
Go Punisher first.
You go Punisher. Sorry.
Joker's 2 days. One more level one removed. More leveled.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But I think this is going to be an awesome film. Unfortunately, I can say there'll be a lot of backlash, but I wouldn't mind at all. I'm
open to it, man.
Like, he doesn't even look like the Joker. No, he's got green hair. He's got the
For those who are too worried, they can still do another version of Joker in the Matt Reeves Batman films anyway. So I think this is going to be a solo one-off project.
Yeah.
I think it seems very interesting, personally.
There's Bruce Wayne is in this, though, isn't he?
His father. His father is Thomas Wayne, is supposedly in it.
Because I thought there was a Joker. There might have been a little kid.
He might be a kid. Yeah, you're right. He's a little kid. Yeah. But Thomas Wayne is reportedly going to play a more prominent role.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens.
Well, so, and you're open to this? So, like, you know,
Definitely. Oh, I'm a huge, as you know, a huge fan of the Bat Universe.
Yeah.
But something like this, it actually really interests me. Because I thought Jared Leto was horrible as Joker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really bad.
I'm not a fan, but even then I could see he was pretty terrible.
Jack Nicholson was incredible. Heath Ledger was incredible. If this is going to be a Joker project about Joker, go down some rabbit holes. Go down some weird routes. I don't just need the Joker we get on animated series. Like, in his own film, I'm open to a more nuanced kind of exploration.
But not so much, apart from him maybe not being depicted as the typical Joker, what do you think about, what if he... This messing around with Jokers, because apparently they're going to do a definitive history of this guy, the Joker.
Right.
So it's going to set in stone, this is how this guy becomes the Joker, which apparently is not the way it's done in the comics, is that?
In the comics, they take, like
it's
Alan
ambiguous,
Moore.
Right? In the
comics. It's ambiguous, yeah.
But here, apparently...
I don't really care, man. No? Like, not particularly. Like, I know that it's not going to be set in stone for the DC Universe movies.
Yeah.
So then I don't really care.
Okay.
None of it worries me that much. Like, what I anticipate is we'll get him turning into the Joker towards the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Like putting the paint on or something like that. I'm open to it, man. Like, look at Jack Nicholson playing Joker. He did a Joker no one's ever seen before. He was, in that version, Joker was the killer of Batman's parents.
Yeah.
Now, that was a giant break with continuity.
That was, wasn't
Joe Chill did it everywhere else, but I was cool with it. I remember being like...
That's true.
16 years old, however old I was in the cinema, 15, and I was like, this is the greatest film I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Batman 89 is still one of my favourite movies, and the fact that Joker is different from how he is in the comics, I couldn't have cared less.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it's kind of a concept to me.
Yeah.
Like, I was talking about this with Dion. Joker, to me, he's the personification of this craziness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a state of mind almost.
Yeah.
You know, like, Heath Ledger was like, sometimes I'm like a dog just chasing cars.
Like, doesn't even know
some
why.
People just like to watch the world burn. Like, that's the Joker.
Yeah.
It's not really like a set in stone like thing. It's a state of mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, think of Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
Okay, Robert De Niro's character. I could see a parallel with that being the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
When he's like, I just want a storm to come and wash all the filth away.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's nuts. He's out there. He's loose as a fucking, you know, as anything. But there's something appealing about it.
About so that's the appeal that I have from that I get from the Joker.
Joker's on a heavy death trip, man. You know, he's on a heavy death trip.
Yeah.
If you really, if you pierce beneath the surface of the Joker, he's actually quite an evil character.
Yeah.
But as Dion was saying, it's in his nature.
Yeah.
That's just the way he's made.
One of the massive scenes for me in The Dark Knight Returns Returns or Rises or whatever. The second
Heath Ledger's one's Dark Knight. Yeah.
The big scene for me was when he burns that pile of cash.
Oh, that's fucking great.
Because to me that says he's not in it for any particular gain.
No.
He just has no care in the world.
Yeah.
And as Alfred said, that's the most dangerous person you can come
across. It is. Well, that's
he's got
the
nothing
Joker
to
I love. Yeah.
And that epitomised to me, that's the essence of the Joker.
Jack Nicholson played that role too. He's like, you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight? They're like, just a line I like to say.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, there's a nuts quality to it. No, I think Joaquin Phoenix is a really interesting choice for this.
Look, I'd like to throw it to you then, Dave, as well. Mm. Joker, jumping back a couple of bits with Spider-Man then. Apparently a lot of purists are up in arms with the portrayal of Spidey in Far From Home.
Really?
What are your thoughts on the absence of Ben Parker? All the liberties of Aunt May being younger and
I'm all on board the modern train. Yeah, no, I really, really think that it was always weird that Aunt May was like 90. And look, I have respect for the past. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, like, sure. That was the past, and I have a lot of reverence for the old comics. But no, I think that's needed, these updates.
Yep.
And in the movies, this is the price you pay for dealing with the devil. By having Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe and introducing him through Civil War and having a connection to Tony, they're the currents that take place in the current franchise. Yep. In movies, they only have limited time.
Yep.
There's no point replicating the Ben Parker experience when you've got the Iron Man experience.
I totally wholeheartedly agree. I've always placed, and this is the trap I think that a lot of comic fans have, is that they expect the movie adaptations to be exactly like the comics.
Well, see, I go for the spirit. You don't need to get the facts exactly right. Just go for the spirit.
They're different beasts. Yeah. And yeah, anyway, that's...
No, I think that's more of a... Sometimes that's more of an older perspective once you've been around a while and you realise that.
Yeah.
Well, one thing you also realise is movies can get it wrong too. Like, there's plenty of movies that just do it terribly. Like, X-Men 3 does a lot of characters terribly.
Oh, yeah, no.
So I'm not a hype man just saying it's always right, but they have to make choices.
They do.
Movies are all about making choices, and you've only got so much screen time. Yeah. And you actually cut that screen time down to a certain number of minutes.
Oh, you have to.
And scenes that just reintroduce characters when you've already moved past it are considered unnecessary.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of the trade-offs of Hollywood, really.
Yeah.
If you're following Hollywood movies, that's one of the trade-offs in franchise pictures.
Yeah.
I don't have too many problems with it.
Absolutely.
Now, you've got an item here. Oh, Zack Snyder is taking on Norse mythology for a Netflix animated series. He's also doing that thing of The Dawn of the Dead. You know how he did the original Dawn of the Dead? Not the original, the remake of Dawn of the Dead. I thought he did a great job.
Oh, that's good. Yeah,
James Gunn wrote it. He directed it. I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it.
And I love the original, Dawn of the Dead. Now, he's doing another one set in the same world for Netflix as well. So this is another project he's doing on Norse mythology. And I got to say, I know Zack Snyder got a lot of heat for Justice League and Batman v Superman, but most of his projects I've loved.
Okay.
Most of them. Like, not 100%, but I'd say 80%.
Look, I would be... going to check this out because it's about Norse mythology. I mean, regardless of if you like Zack Snyder or not, I mean, I think it'd be pretty cool.
Well, think of what he did with 300.
Yeah, that was good.
Jesus Christ, I thought it was a bit more than good. Tonight we dine in hell, Ray. I love 300.
300 is good. I just thought, and it's nothing to do with him, it's just that I thought there were a lot of things seemed to be just done on set. That's all.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a very special effects.
Very special effects. And like, it was...
It was.
It needed to expand the canvas.
Very green screen.
Yeah. It needed them to be out in the real setting and location every now and again. It just seemed to be all done,
No, it was. Remember that bit where he throws the spear and gets the guy?
It's got
some good bits, man.
It is. There are some really good bits in there.
The sequel's horrible.
The
sequel's terrible.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. The sequel's a real disappointment compared
to... I've got that on my watch list. I haven't watched it yet.
Look, it's not... When I say horrible compared to the original, you know, it just feels like there's a lot less of a budget.
5 out of 10?
Yeah, probably about a 5 out of 10. And I'd give the original, like, I'll do a stew, 9.5.
9.5,
I fucking love the original.
Wow.
The original to me is one of those pump-up movies.
Yeah,
like, if I was going to go on a date, if I wasn't with Michelle, I'd watch the original just before I went out.
Okay, can I ask as well, 9.5 out of that, Wolverine's Origins?
How much?
Yeah.
9.
Oh, okay. Okay, I thought you would hit the big 10 for that. Or
No. Yeah, this is something
people don't understand. You saw that multiple times, right? Though.
Sorry,
you saw that multiple times.
7 times in cinemas.
Ooh.
And I watched it the other day again.
Oh,
I fucking love that movie.
Yeah.
No, not 10 out of 10 movies are very rare. Like, Casino.
Yeah, Heat.
Heat.
Yeah.
Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, Heat. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. E.T. Yeah.
Ronan.
No. Ronan, good movie. 8.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, like, yeah, good movie. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, sure.
But tens are few and far between.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And mostly none of them are superhero movies.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
God. Like, Dawn of the Dead, the original, is a 9.5.
Ooh.
The original Dawn of the Dead, I think it's a remarkable movie.
Okay.
I'm talking about the 1970s movie
that
he did. Day of the Dead, 9. You know?
So I'd give Evil Dead 2, I'd give it 10.
Evil Dead 2 is excellent. Army of Darkness isn't bad either.
Army of Darkness is awesome. Evil Dead 2 does the balance of horror and comedy very well.
No, Evil Dead 2 was one of my all-time favourite movies. I've got it on DVD. And I think Army of Darkness is also excellent.
Army of Darkness is...
Have you watched Evil Dead?
Yeah, I haven't watched the latest season, but have you seen it?
I picked up the Blu-ray for it recently and I've just started watching it.
It's really good.
I got the complete collection for about $20 from JB.
That's very good, man.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah, I love, what's his name, Bruce Campbell?
Bruce Campbell, Ash, he's awesome.
Yeah, and with, what's the director's name, Sam Raimi?
Sam Raimi, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic combination.
Mm.
When they work together, they just light the scene on
fire. He was very elastic. I found him very much like Jim Carrey back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, he did a lot, looked like he did a lot of his own stunts. He was very flexible.
Bruce Campbell's excellent.
He's awesome. Yeah.
And Sam Raimi is a great filmmaker.
Very good.
Underrated filmmaker.
Oh, I love his stuff. Yeah, no,
he's excellent. Now, you've got another bit here about comics and cocktails, Ray. What's going on?
Here we go. So this is my third attempt, Dave, adding a bit more flavour to the news.
I like it, man. I love it. You're talking to a guy who loves a cocktail.
Oh, that's why I thought I'd put it in there. Yeah, so there's a guy here. His name's Jeremy Hahn.
Mm.
And what he's trying to do, he's trying to start up a Patreon page, and he'll be submitting cocktail recipes intrinsically linked or related somehow to comics.
Mm.
So if you do
keyword
comics,
somehow.
Yeah. So if you do love your comics and you do love the odd tipple.
I do.
You can combine both here. And the intent is
so is he saying if you like Batman, you'll like a certain kind of cocktail. Is that what it is?
I think he's making his own recipes for it. Because okay. I actually came across, not that he did it, but there's actually a Moon Knight cocktail as well.
Did you try it?
I haven't. I'd like to. Yeah. I'll have to look it up again. But anyway, so the intent is to make it into a book, bind it all together, and to
release so
it.
This is his Patreon appeal to basically do it. Kind of like a Kickstarter style thing.
Kind of like Kickstarter thing. But yeah, like I said, if you like your old tipple, and
I like a pina colada, and I like a mojito.
A mojito is very nice. Very refreshing. Yeah,
very refreshing.
Yeah.
I'm basically drinking. I'm not much of a drinker, but I'll have a gin and tonic a lot of the time. Okay. But a pina colada when I was in Hawaii, I was sucking down those pina coladas like nothing else.
And you're in the right place for it as well.
I came back from Hawaii like a fucking balloon. I was almost away at the airport. Like I could have stayed over there, man. To be honest, I didn't want to leave. You know
Hawaii,
what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's fantastic. The breakfast. I don't know if you had a Hawaiian breakfast.
Yeah, I did.
It's a mountain.
Yeah, no, I did.
They eat big over there. It's good.
It was really good, man. And when I came back, I was closing my eyes and I was still seeing the waves and stuff.
Yeah.
For like a couple of days afterwards.
Yeah,
it was very
nice. I loved
Hawaii.
We went over there. I've only been once. We went over there for a friend's wedding.
Sure.
Magical.
You didn't want to leave, did you? You know,
didn't want to
leave,
no.
I didn't want to leave. But we were over there for 3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
And I was just in heaven. So was Michelle.
Yeah.
It's got that nice blend of US culture with just a perfect scenery.
Mm. So you were in Oahu or...
We went to three islands. Oahu, Kauai.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And Maui.
Okay. Nice.
Flew over the Big Island, which just had volcanoes and stuff.
That's right. You did the helicopter, and right?
You did the helicopter. Yeah. Was it a plane? Yeah, it was a plane. Small plane. And then $500 US, and then the guy won a tip at the end. I was like... $500 US.
Yeah sure.
And then still wanting more of a tip, mate. Like, come
holy
on.
Holy moly.
Yeah, it was Michelle's birthday.
Yeah, for sure.
Special
but,
treat.
Like, yeah, that's
it. No, but it had a great time. Maui was my favourite.
Yeah.
Maui was just my favourite. We started off a couple of days in Waikiki.
Yep.
Kick off. Then I think we went to Kauai. Is that how you pronounce it?
Oh, I'm not sure.
I think it's Kauai. Yeah. It could be slightly wrong, but and then to Maui.
Uh-huh.
And Maui was my personal favourite. Okay. And I'm selecting from very high grade experiences.
Yeah.
And we're just going into that water. It was beautiful. I did not want to leave. Neither did Michelle.
Yeah.
The gridiron was on the TV, like the American football, the NFL. And I was just like, man, I could just stay.
It's
here.
Cool, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time.
And it's not that, I mean, like.
Everyone's driving huge trucks around.
Yeah. It's not that expensive like, as well compared to Sydney.
Really? It was pretty expensive. The accommodation was expensive. The flights weren't expensive. The accommodation is what sets you back.
Oh, okay.
But we did a lot of...
did you Airbnb? Or?
Yeah.
We did a couple of that.
We did quite a bit of that. Look, to be fair, man, we were going on the more expensive side. So it was an expensive holiday.
Of course,
put it that way. We were luxurating.
Yeah.
But the experience was incredible.
Yeah. No, it is a great... great
and I'm not normally that blown away. But normally by holidays, I want to get home by the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm a bit of a homebody.
Sometimes, yeah. You know,
I'm a bit of a... I get to the end, I'm like, man, I can't wait to get back home to my Xbox. I did not want to leave.
Yeah,
I could really see myself living there, kind of thing.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it was great, man. Like that's the plan, dude. To one day just be retired living in Hawaii.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Live
in Hawaii.
Yeah, it would be very fucking.
Actually,
nice.
I wouldn't mind up.
I'd just be riding, dude. You know,
right? Yeah,
I'd just be riding and you know have properties and just bring
big truck.
In that way.
Yeah.
I'd have a big truck. I'd have a big black fucking van, man. Yeah, for sure.
Meet out justice. You know, they're dead
I'd be, no, I'd be past the meet out justice point by then. Davey might have a bit of a gut by that point.
Dave, you've got a listener based in Mongolia. Is there one in Hawaii?
I think there are some listeners in Hawaii, yeah. And I shout out to them. Daniel is one of them. Oh. And we've got some big listeners in Ghana. In Africa. Yeah, lovely. In fact, we were number one in the visual arts podcast there.
Oh, lovely.
So we've got some African listeners as well, so shout out to there.
Fantastic.
Hands across the globe with us, man. You know? Like,
the Signal is broadcast.
Signal has a lot of alliances, man. I'm a big fan of the alliances, you know what I'm saying? Shout out to the collective.
Oh, yes, of course.
We really should mention two members of the collective in the room right now. Yeah. Really, you're almost three because you've got two podcasts in there.
Oh, yeah, true.
So you're repping.
Dave, you, I think without a doubt, the Signal have been waving that flag the most, and it's fantastic, it's great that you do. I always forget to give the collective a shout out on the show, but I'm so glad that at least someone does, and you do it, and it's great. So, listeners, really, it's not just the Signal, it's not just the Moon Knight podcast, Into the Night, there's Capes and Lunatics, there's
Inner Demons,
the Defenders TV podcast, yeah. Immortal Iron Fist, there's a whole swathe of them, Atalan Rising.
I am your target demographic.
Yep.
I love that title, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, a bit of a shout out there to Adam. I think he reached 7 million.
Woo!
Yeah, on
the
that is a massive. Wow. So very proud to be associated with
him.
What
about Bobby Moriarty? There's a guy who spins his wheels like crazy. That's a guy who goes deep.
Who's that?
Bobby Moriarty? In the collective chat.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Wow, there's a guy who comes in from some angles.
He does.
I enjoy his stuff, man.
Yeah, a big shout-out to Bobby from the EMP, Earth's Mightiest Podcast.
I'm a big fan of that guy's work.
Yeah, he's great. I haven't seen him around the trap, so Bobby, just drop some.
Well, when he comes in, he comes in hard,
he
man.
He does, doesn't he?
He bowls some short balls.
Almost a stream of consciousness kind
it
of
It is
thing.
Almost. I respond to it.
Yeah, you do. Loving it.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff.
Somebody you were hoping I might be. Oh, wake of the feeling we've known. How long have I been sleeping? How long have I been drifting on through the night? How long have I been running for that morning flight? Through the whispered promises and the changing light of the bed where we both lie, late for the sky.
So, Ray, there's news now that Question and the Joker comics are coming from DC Black Label with Jeff Lemire on writing duties.
Yeah, I'm very excited with Jeff Lemire being on it. Mm. I've heard of good things about the Question. Again, I don't know too much. Is he a good character?
Look, I certainly have read quite a bit of the Denny O'Neil Question. We did volume one on the show, and I kept reading. I loved it. And Greg Rucka, who I love, did good Question with Renee Montoya as the Question. And it's a very interesting character. Now, what's really interesting, though, is the pitch for the story.
Uh-huh.
Okay, this is the pitch. So, at first, the Question, the deaths of Vic Sage, comes across like a classic hardball detective series, but the series opens with an existential twist. For reasons the Question doesn't understand, he's been living and dying in Hub City, seemingly trapped in a loop of reincarnation that spans from the Old West into the 1930s.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty good. It's a bit...
Now, in the original Question series from Denny O'Neil, he was very much a hard-boiled sort of detective guy. But there was lots of, like, existential thought and stuff. So yeah. It was a sort of quite a philosophical crime series. Whereas Joker Killer Smile follows the Crown Prince of Crime as he has a fatal encounter with a mental health professional that radically altered the course of a number of lives. And while that story premise sounds familiar, the story isn't about Harley Quinn. So, I mean, interesting to know what's happening there.
They both sound very good. Look, the Black Label's...
for example, Lois Lane, Greg Rucka's story is coming out from Black Label. Aquaman's coming out with Kelly Sue DeConnick and various other things as well.
I did do the reading of Superman Year One. That's Black Label, apparently, as well.
What'd you think?
That was good. I think I gave it a 7 out of 10.
I'd give it about the same.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. I did issue one on the Signal.
Yeah. And it's good. Look, again, I had, as I mentioned to Connor, my co-host, it's another origin story.
Sure.
And we seem to do a lot of origin stories on Superman, so I wanted to see something different. But, of course, I understand, Year One.
It's going
to
be the beginning.
It was slightly different. Mm. So the big thing was him joining the Navy.
What was the controversy over?
Him joining the Navy.
That was the controversy.
Yeah.
I was going, what is the controversy in this comic? I thought it might have been that he had sex with Lana Lang.
No, I think the big things were, okay, so Frank Miller seems to write these particular scenes into a lot of his series, and when Lana gets assaulted by, there's a gang of, you know, the bullies.
Oh, right, the old thing where they're saying the women just use as rape victims.
Yeah, so I think that was the...
Okay, I wasn't a million miles away with
that. No, you weren't, no.
Yeah, I knew it would be something over that.
Yeah, and the big thing was this Navy thing, because he's never been in the Navy before, and as Connor mentions... he's Superman. What's he going to do? What's he doing, you know, fighting a war, killing people? Mm. I said, hold your horses. He might not be doing any of that. He actually might go to the Navy and figure out, you know, I can save people. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
It's also Year One, so it's not in regular continuity anyway.
No, exactly. Yeah, which is...
Supposedly is in the same continuity as Dark Knight Returns, I heard Frank Miller said.
Yeah, and there was a little hark to that as well, apparently, because... There's a reference of Superman being in danger of becoming a war machine.
And in fairness, that's exactly what he was in Dark Knight Returns. Yeah. He was the government stooge.
Yep. So,
and that was the take that Frank Miller went with. Frank Miller has said he loves Superman. That was just what he needed for that story.
Yep. Exactly.
I have a lot of time for Frank Miller. I never hopped off the hype train.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I read Holy Terror. I like that he went after the Muslim fundamentalists.
Oh, okay, yeah, you know? Sure.
When he pitched Batman versus Al Qaeda, I was like, yeah, let's do
it. Okay, right.
Yeah, that's what Holy Terror was going to be, Batman versus Al Qaeda. He went over to Al Qaeda and killed like the heads of it.
Okay.
And DC wouldn't touch it.
Yeah,
and so he took it across to someone else and he did it as Holy Terror. I fucking loved it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, yeah. No, I was unaware of that. But anyway, you know, Black Label, I find it an exciting label.
Yeah, from me too.
DC.
Me too.
I'd like to see Wonder Woman, Black Label. I don't know if that's going to happen. Aquaman sounds exciting.
I'm not a big Aquaman fan, but Kelly Sue DeConnick has me interested, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, which is coming out this week from Matt Fraction, is Black Label. It might be.
Yeah. Have you read Lois Lane issue one?
I certainly have. I did it on the Signal last week.
No, of course.
I loved it.
Yeah, yeah, you loved it?
Dude, Greg Rucka, Lois Lane, you had me at hello. Like, the combination of two of one of my favourite creators of all time and one of my favourite characters.
Yeah.
Now, it's really good. Look, I don't want to oversell it. It's an issue one. It's an introduction.
Yep, sure.
But, it's very enjoyable.
Okay.
Cool. I've got a lot of time for anything to do with Lois Lane. The question's in it.
Oh, okay.
And so it'll be interesting. So I will say this. Look, the Joker series I could see myself reading at one point as a trade, but I'll be reading the question from issue one.
Okay.
And I will say to people, if you want to read a good question, go check out Denny O'Neill's question. It's very good comics.
Yep. Look, as a newbie again, you'll have to lay the platform for me here, Dave. Mm. The question, okay, hard-boiled detective, what is he? Has he got his no face? He's got
no
a power?
Face. You know Rorschach from Watchmen?
Yep.
That's based on the question.
Oh, okay.
So the question's a lot less violent than Rorschach, but he has the same, it's the same design. Like, you know how Rorschach has, like, symbols on his?
The Rorschach, yeah.
Yeah, the question is just blank.
Okay.
And he's, Vic Sage is at least in the original question, he's like a news anchorman.
Okay.
Like a reporter or something, but he's like an investigative journalist. So as well as being an investigative journalist, he's also like a vigilante. And he's a bit nuts.
Uh-huh.
He's not a million miles from your Moon Knight stuff, but he's more existential and a bit philosophical and stuff. Okay.
Has he got any
powers? Okay. He's just like a martial artsy kind of guy, and he's all about busting open big stories. Like the fact ties into him being an investigative journalist.
Yeah.
So Hub City's like imagining Gotham City, hopelessly corrupt.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So
which would appeal to you then, the investigative?
Yeah,
reporting?
It does. Yeah. No, it's pretty good. Now Denny O'Neill wrote it as a very high concept. Mm. And it's a bit artsy-fartsy, but it's quite good.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
I think Stu was a bit more mixed, but, I mean, I kept reading it. I've still got it on my iPad.
Yeah,
It's only about a 39-issue run, 38-issue run.
Okay.
It's a high watermark of comics at that time period.
Yeah, nice.
It's not like a four-quadrant comic. It's not going to appeal to everyone.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty good. Now, I don't know if you ever read Ecstatics.
No.
This was a really satirical series by Peter Milligan and Mike Allred.
I like Peter Milligan and Mike Allred.
Well, you'd love this then.
Right.
Anyway, it's coming back now. Excellent. Issue one. They're returning to Fight Culture War from Marvel in 2020. Now, I will say this. Ecstatics was an excellent series which spun out of the ashes of X-Force. I really thought it was some of the most amusing and kind of witty comics I'd read.
Okay.
I've got the omnibus out there. I've never actually finished it. I've read about half of it. It's really good. It was a really satirical take.
Right.
On not just Marvel Universe, very much a comment on society at the time.
Uh-huh.
In the 90s. And Mike Allred, as you know, is stunning.
So is it a mutant team or something?
It literally was X-Force.
Oh, it is?
So
okay.
Imagine X-Force after all the hype's gone away, all your big cables and all that have all gone, and you're left with, like, the absolute pits.
Okay.
And Peter Milligan took it over, and he very much took a comedic and satirical, more than comedic, satirical take, and then it went so well, because I think X-Force had pretty much run its day, you know, that they rebranded as Ecstatics. And it's very much kind of like, this is a comic book you could give to someone who's never read comics. It really is just...
Oh, wow.
It's just a really fun, smart read. It's actually very underrated and not as well known as it should be. I had the good fortune to come across a couple of issues at some point a few years ago, and then I went and picked up The Omnibus.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it's one of my favourite series from that time period, even though I didn't read it at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that ran into a lot of controversy because I think they did some jokes around the death of Princess Diana, which didn't play well. And I think Peter Milligan said it kind of killed our rhythm.
Uh-huh.
But they had a really good rhythm for a few years.
Okay.
And Mike Allred on art. I love Mike Allred's art.
Yeah, right, okay. So Elred did it in the 90s as well?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So it's the original team reunited, yeah.
Fantastic, because, like, I mean, look, a little shout-out. Peter Milligan, I love. Dave, you know, I do like a lot of Valiant comics.
Sure.
Peter Milligan wrote a great run on Shadow Man and more recently on Britannia, which is based on the Roman Empire.
I've heard good things about this.
Very cool, very cool. And Michael Red, of course, we both know, coupled with Dan Slott to do that awesome Silver Surfer run.
Yeah.
There's an omnibus of that out.
It's a good Fantastic Four, was on Mad Men.
Yep. Oh, yeah, Mad Men. Yeah, very good on that. Yeah.
Oh, Mike Allred. I love Mike Allred's art. It's just beautiful.
It is.
Him and his wife together as a team.
Yep.
They're fantastic. I consider them top quality. Now, also Joker stuff, John Carpenter, the film director.
Yep.
Is going to write Joker Villain of the Year special.
Oh.
So, from the guy who brought us, like, Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
The Thing.
Yeah.
They Live. One of my favourites, They Live, man.
Hang on. So, just indulge me here, David. They Live is just the one I'm thinking of.
Mm.
It's an alien invasion.
Well, the aliens have invaded. And if you have the special glasses on, you can see that they're just like the...
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, yep.
The cyborgs or whatever underneath the flesh.
Yes.
And the whole world is
Ratty Roddy Piper?
Ratty Roddy Piper, yeah. Playing a real loose drifter. Like a guy who's a long way from home, man. Yeah. I love that movie. When he's like, I've come here to kick butts and chew bubble gum and I'm fresh out of bubble gum or whatever it was he said. Like, yeah, no, John Carpenter's a genuine talent.
Yeah, he's good.
That'd be interesting to see what he brings to like a Joker comic. Yeah. Now, here's some big news. Hellblazer is joining the Sandman universe in October as John Constantine gets a new ongoing.
Ooh.
So Hellblazer's back, thank God.
Yes.
I mean that kind of like ironically, considering the title.
Yeah.
Look, John Constantine was so underserved by the New 52. Hellblazer was such a huge title with so many great creators went through there, like Garth Ennis, Azzarello, Ellis. A lot of people had good runs on Hellblazer.
Yeah.
It's good to see the Sandman universe, which so far has only brought me comics I have no interest in. Like, nothing's worse than the son of Sandman becoming Sandman. Sandman was so much better than when Neil Gaiman finished the series. What came after has always been so lackluster.
It's hard to live up to then, isn't it?
And it fails by like such a long distance.
Yeah, right.
That's just my opinion. But anyway, Hellblazer, who originally in the very beginning of Sandman, they had kind of a crossover.
Yeah.
Is coming back. So look, I'm excited for that because I think Hellblazer was a really great series.
Look, I've always been interested in Constantine.
Hellblazer,
yeah. Love the Keanu Reeves movie. I know that was very different from the real iteration of it.
I enjoyed the TV series from a few years ago.
Well, I wonder. I've heard really good things about it.
It's pretty good.
And he reprises his role right in Legends of Tomorrow. But I don't watch Legends of Tomorrow.
Michelle and I have watched plenty of Legends of Tomorrow.
Is it good? Bad? No.
No, it's good. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Very watchable. TV. The actor was excellent. Who played Constantine? He summed up the role perfectly. That actor, really good.
Matt Ryan.
Good work there because I only had the Matt. I didn't know who's Ryan.
Yeah, so
there you go.
Well.
The team combines. We've got a new series, Contagion, coming from Ed Brisson. A new evil beyond understanding comes to the Marvel Universe. Pretty much sounds like what is it? A seemingly unstoppable force has invaded the Marvel Universe, and it's going to take every hero of the New York streets of New York to stop it. A strange substance is taking over heroes and citizens alike, draining them of their life force, stealing their knowledge and abilities, and neither science nor magic can stop it. Where did it come from? Can anything destroy it? And who will fall to its awful, overwhelming power?
Yep. I am pumped for this, Dave. I don't know about you.
You're in it, man.
Yes, Moon Knight is in it.
There you go.
Yeah. You have Moon Knight. There's Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Jessica Jones.
Oh, okay. You're all right. Good.
Yeah.
Frank?
I'm not sure if Frank's in it. The last...
Sounds like something you should be getting involved in.
Ed Brisson is... I'm a big fan of Ed Brisson.
I like Ed Brisson,
He's
too.
Really good. Yeah. He's been pumping out some really solid stories lately with X-Force. He did Iron Fist previously before that.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you know, a lot of people saying that this is very similar to Deceased.
Yeah, which I've covered every issue on the show so far.
Look, not having touched Deceased at all, this is new for me, so I'm happy with this. Yeah.
And it's look, to be honest, similar concepts of both companies has been happening for a long, long time.
Exactly. I'm not going to let this stop me getting this. So,
I would have thought this had you written all over it, actually, right?
And the good thing about this, though, okay, it's out five issues, one weekly, so just it covers
bang,
5 weeks.
Bang, bang, bang. Yeah.
$3.99 an issue. They're not going bloody $7.99, $4.99.
Yeah.
So that's good.
I'm glad. I'll definitely be checking out on the Signal.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us to Weekly Comics.
Hey!
So we've got Batman Universe 1. This is the first collection of the Walmart specials. Bendis Batman, for me, was subpar. It's a shame the Walmart customers got this. This wacky style Batman was not my jam. I gave it 5 out of 10. I reviewed it on Batman Universe.
You did.
I reviewed Batman Universe on Batman Universe. And some clowns out there were giving it 10 out of 10. Right? What's going on, man? Seriously, what's going on? I thought the humor in this was poor.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was the art was fantastic. The art saved
great.
It. Yeah. I hated the interplay between Alfred and Batman. That should have been Alfred and Nightwing.
Right.
I gave it a right on the pass mark, a 5.
Okay, so 5 out of 10. Look, I wouldn't give it a 10 out of 10. And not being a Batman fan and not reading many, or if at all, much of his comics, I'm not sure if this is a standard thing. But look, I liked the opening where you see it from first-person perspective. I thought that was really... Does that happen a lot? Because I thought that was really cool. Like, you'd only see Batman's hands. You see a reflection of him in the window.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, I do totally agree with you. Now, the problem with Brian Michael Bendis over and over again, his voicings for his characters, they all seem to sound the same. Very, like, sarcastic, you know, very...
quippy. It's his version of witty.
Yeah, and so I found that unerring because I guess if you've read enough of Bendis' stuff, you pick up on it, and...
Yeah.
The likes of, what's her name, the daughter of Jonah Hex, she sounded to me like Bendis. She sounded like Kitty Pryde. She sounded like everyone else on this issue.
Bendis has been doing this for a lot of years,
mm.
and he's totally blind to it. I listened to him on Word Balloon. The guy still thinks he's writing the greatest stuff of all time. He is a guy, he's like a ball player playing on memory now.
Yeah, yeah.
He's lost what made him good.
Mm. Look, he knows how to craft a story. It's just the voicing, the characterizations I found very
difficult. Dialogue, which was a strength, is now a weakness.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at his Daredevil run and compare it with this.
Look
now.
At his Ultimate Spider-Man run. Look at his New Avengers run.
Absolutely.
By the end of New Avengers, he was doing this, though.
Yeah.
The New Avengers is where he burnt out.
Oh, okay.
He's been burnt out for a long, long time.
Yeah. I got that Defenders title that he had, you know, off the back of the Netflix series.
Sure.
Every issue was like this. It was really a hard pill to
swallow. So what's your score, Ray?
I would give it in between a 6 or 6.5.
Sure.
Because a lot of the weight from that comes from the art.
I really did
enjoy the art.
That's very good.
And I did enjoy the cameos towards the end of Deathstroke.
Yes.
And Green Arrow. That's cool.
I did, and in fact, that was in my review of Batman Universe. I pointed to some nice usage. I like the sort of nod to Jonah Hex, one of my favorite characters, and also Deathstroke and Green Arrow turning up. It was a decent end to the issue.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
Then we had Reaver 1 coming from Image Comics. This was from Justin Jordan, kind of fantasy-based comic. I found it wordy and dense with some good concepts. I found it overall, it was very jarring with some lame execution.
Yes. Look, out of all of the weekly comics, I found this one the toughest read.
Sure.
Maybe it's not in my...
It was a grind of a read, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And this was the last one that I read, so it wasn't a good way to end
it. I struggled to finish it.
I did as well. Look, I don't mind fantasy and stuff, but I found this the way it was written too wordy. And I don't mean to sound like a... You know, a philistine with that. It just wasn't written well.
But even the action didn't make much sense. Like it was kind of slow.
Yeah,
and I just didn't feel there was a good flow to it.
Yeah,
and at the end he was saying he wrote it all inspired by Conan the Barbarian. Yeah. I'm like, it just doesn't.
I read that as well, so I was thinking, oh, maybe Dave's gonna like rate this high, but no, I would give it a 5.
I gave it a 5.5.
Yeah, I'd give it a 5. Look, maybe on a second read, it might make a bit more sense. I enjoyed the action towards the end. It started to make a bit more sense toward the end.
I will say this. Yeah. As someone who wrote my first book, was a fantasy book. I originally had it pitched as a comic book.
Mm.
Comic books can be hard to do fantasy because of the amount of exposition needed.
Yeah.
And I eventually decided to write it as a novel, where it was a lot more successful. But the reason I'm saying that is, with a comic book, you have only so many panels and so much time. And really, in a lot of fantasy concepts, there is quite a bit of information that needs to be skillfully dumped on the reader.
Yeah.
And he's just doing a very unskillful info dump. Look, what I'm saying is, I looked at the same challenges when I was writing my first book.
Yeah.
And I chose to write it as a novel, mostly because I felt I could get the information across to the reader in a better way.
Yeah.
So I understand his pain, but I still don't think the execution here was poor. I'm giving it a 5.5, and I think I'm probably being a bit generous.
The art was quite decent, again, I thought, but
not... It was decent without being anything special.
Yeah, not enough to carry it. And if anything as well, I did really dig the cover.
Good cover.
So then I was let down with the insides, if you know what I mean. I had high expectations because the cover was pretty cool by Becky Cloonan.
Well, it's one of those instances where issue one didn't really sell the comic very well, you know? Yeah. And I'm not going to continue reading.
Yeah, I might just pass on this one.
Yeah. Next up, we had Invisible Woman. This was basically telling the story of Sue Storm. Very competent comic book storytelling, featuring one of my favorite characters at Marvel, the Invisible Woman, Sue Storm. Mm-hmm. I gave this 7.5 out of 10. And Mark Waid, for me, he's not the Mark Waid of yesteryear, but this was a much better effort than some other Mark Waid I've read recently.
Yeah, I totally agree with this. Look, I would give this slightly less. I did enjoy it. 7 out of 10 for me.
Sure.
Really enjoyable. The only thing was, I mean... The only thing that kind of irked me a little was I didn't know this, you know, maybe Mark Waid's trying to paint this new picture of Sue Storm. I never knew she had this espionage kind of background. So it's like, this is not Sue Storm to me.
I didn't know that. I wonder if she has had it previously. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe
she probably has.
Maybe she has. And if she has, then I'm totally off the mark.
But... Well, I always liked the appearance of the old Nick Fury.
Yeah.
Because one thing I really, really, really don't like about Modern Marvel is that the Ultimate Universe Nick Fury was Samuel L. Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the movie started, they killed off the original Nick Fury, who was a great character, and replaced him with Samuel L. Jackson style and just gave him all the personalities of the father.
Mm.
And I just felt it was one of the poorest trades in Marvel history. The original Nick Fury is a badass character.
He's cool, yeah.
Yeah, there was really no reason to do that because you already had the Ultimate Universe Nick Fury. And I love Samuel L. Jackson. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. But just the way they did it was just so cheap.
Yeah.
And it was such a cynical move. Mm. And here you see an appearance of original Nick Fury, and a lot of readers like me love that.
Yep.
You know, it was a really poor move from Marvel to do that transformation.
Yeah. I really enjoyed seeing Nick Fury you mentioned earlier in Original Sin. I think Stuart mentioned it. So it was good to see him back there. But yeah, I agree. You know, I do like the Sam Jackson version as well.
Away. I'm one of the biggest Samuel L. Jackson fans on the planet.
Yeah. But, you know, the father, Nick Fury,
he was a great character, is all I'm saying.
He's on the wall now, isn't he? He's up there somewhere.
I don't know what he's doing now, man. But, like, whatever, he's fucking never in the comics. And this was a rare appearance.
Yeah, so it was good to see. I don't know. I just thought this was a bit of a Black Widow dressed in Invisible Woman.
And she meets Black Widow at the end, which I really liked.
Which is cool. The art
to be honest,
cool.
I am a big Sue Storm fan, and I have no idea if she's ever been a secret agent before.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me if there are some old stories where they do stuff like that with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
But even so, but she's always had, this is the thing about Sue Storm, she's always been a mother... a sister to Johnny, a good friend, and she's even played around the field with Namor and stuff. So she's always had, and in Civil War they played on that as well in the comics. Mm-hmm. Like, she's got a mind of her own. Like, they gave that character a lot more than just the wife as the years went on. Like, originally she was just the wife.
Yeah.
But Stan Lee once got on board on his soapbox and took aim at people who said Sue Storm was a lame character.
Yeah.
And he said Sue Storm's an integral part of the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And that's the building blocks of the Marvel Universe.
Oh, absolutely. I can't remember who said it, but Fantastic Four is having a grand designs
I saw that, yeah.
The Magna Carta of Marvel Comics, they called the Fantastic Four. So, so Sue Storm's part of, obviously, the foundations of Marvel Comics.
Great character.
She's a great character. Look, I'd like her in her role as the familial member, but I do admit that is kind of a little bit of a cul-de-sac as to what you can do with the character. So I guess Mark Waid's fleshing her out a bit weird.
I liked as well that she told Reed that she was with Uncle and he understood.
No.
I liked that Reed understood that Sue had a mission of her own.
Yeah.
Because dealing with Fury is a bit like dealing with the devil.
Yeah.
Everything's a bit of a trade with him. He's very transactional.
He is.
Which I like.
not entirely trustworthy as well.
That's exactly what I mean. Like, it's very much you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours kind of relationship with him.
Yeah.
You know, he allows the superheroes a certain element of freedom, even with Frank Castle, as long as they play ball with him when needed.
Exactly. So the art was above average here. I really did enjoy it.
I found the art very good.
Very cool indeed. So 7 I thought was good.
Okay, and 7.5 from me. Now, finally, this week for Weekly Comics, we had Space Bandits, a new Mark Miller joint. Mm-hmm. I thought this was a very interesting first issue, well told. Basically, a collection of badasses, really, isn't it? Pulling scores. I will say this. There's a certain thinness of concept, content rather than concept to a lot of Miller's recent work, which I think hurts its long-term lifespan and rereadability. He's been very successful, but I feel like he pitches things that don't have, like, he should pay them off more than he does.
Yeah.
Good concepts.
Yeah.
But then he's very happy with just doing 6 issues and just doing, I'm done.
Right.
You know, he's very much like, here's the idea for the TV show. Yeah. And
He doesn't develop it.
Doesn't follow through enough for me. I enjoyed this issue.
Yep.
But I feel like we're only going to get around 6 issues, you know?
Okay.
Jupiter's Legacy was another one. You know, I love Jupiter's Legacy. I wish he'd stayed in that world. But I think the way he operates is like he writes and thinking, this could be a show.
Yeah.
And I could make a lot of money off this.
Yeah.
And to me, I feel like he kind of lets himself down a little bit because I think I could read 50 issues of this.
I could as well. Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised with this, actually.
Oh, it's good, man. And Mark Miller's a good comic book writer.
Oh, no, he is, no doubt. He is, and so I didn't know what to expect with this. And, you know, I had no real interest in reading it, but I thought, okay, we'll read it. And enjoyed it from cover to cover.
Did you read the Lobo kind of like one he did? It wasn't Lobo, but it was basically Lobo. It was only a couple of months ago. Basically he has like a belt, you know, Lobo, the 90s character.
Yeah.
Yeah, he basically has his version of that. I don't know. I forget what it was called. I could probably research it, but I thought for a second that character was going to be in this because the art was similar.
Okay.
But it wasn't. But this is a cool concept of basically these villains teaming up to do scores, and like this chick has put this team of the worst badasses, you know, of all time together, and then they betray her at the end.
Yes.
And then you see the spin-off, she's in prison. She wasn't actually killed. I loved it.
Exactly. I thought that was a really cool twist. I know it's probably a bit of a trope, but I fell for it. That opening bit with that first protagonist, I thought she was going to be the main character. She gets blown away.
Yes.
And I thought, okay. And then for about 15 to 20 pages, you get this other story.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, okay, well, she's gone. But she turns up in the end in the jail. Yeah.
I always fall for those twists as well, right?
Everyone,
the time they do that twist, they get me.
Yeah. I thought it was just done really well because she, all intents, she looked dead.
Yes.
And they just left her. And I thought, oh, that's a very clever way to start a comic because you get invested in this character, but we're actually telling this other story.
Mm.
But no, she actually comes back at the end. I gave it a 7.5. I thought this was the strongest out of the 4 issues.
I'm actually giving it an 8.
An 8? Yes.
Yeah, I read it and it's actually lingered in my brain. Mm. And that's often how I rate things like that, how much they resonate.
Yeah.
I actually think this is actually a pretty damn good issue.
Yeah.
And I would recommend, if you enjoyed this, check out that recent comic he did that's kind of a Lobo kind version. I'll find the title of it.
So it wasn't for DC, it was an Image
book? No, it's another Image book.
Okay.
And he only put it out about, I think it's only had about 2 issues. It's not called Law Dog, but it's something like that.
Okay.
And he's playing about Shaco the Bounty Hunter, I think it's called.
Shaco.
Okay. I think it's SHAKO, something like that.
Okay.
If you like this, you'll probably like that.
Oh, definitely, because this is the sort of cosmic stuff I do really like. And like you say, I could read 50 issues of this easy.
Me too.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah.
Now we have a new section on the show called Shopping with Dave. Now, Shopping with Dave, and this week it's Shopping with Dave and Ray. Yeah,
we've both got our trolleys.
Yeah, we've both got our trolleys. And like, I go by Jimmy King's Comics, puts out the newsletter.
Yep.
I love that newsletter because that's how I know what stuff's coming out, what stuff Dave should, you know, in my mind, needs to buy.
Yes.
Now, this week coming out, which I've ordered, is the Massive Omnibus.
Ooh.
Which is a Brian Wood series, and I gave you the first trade,
yeah,
right? Set in a dystopian future where basically pollution has killed the world, and people go around on these big sort of freight frigate things, and the Massive is one of those. Like, so sort of like, that's like a living city that's going around because the world's totally screwed.
Yeah.
Due to, you know, climate change or whatever, you know, environmental disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very good. And so the Omnibus picks, I think, the first couple of trades together, puts them together.
It's very interesting.
So, yeah, that's my automatic pick for this week. I'm just looking through any new stuff coming out from Marvel or DC. I don't see too much that's really screaming my name on it, but, you know, we'll see. What about you, Ray? Oh, another thing I wanted to mention is I basically got this series I really enjoy called Northlanders. Northlanders is kind of a story, Brian Wood again, of Viking tales from certain different periods of Viking history.
Yeah, rings a bell,
We did the first volume on the show.
Yeah.
I've picked up the next two omnibuses, so I've got all three of them now, the complete collection that came in the other day, so I made that purchase as well.
Okay.
Ray, anything screaming your name out in
Yeah, shopping? I mean, I haven't checked out the latest releases, the latest and greatest, but there are definitely always a few, Dave. There's always a few on my list.
Sure.
I think I mentioned to you just before, I've been hitting the TKO Presents publishers. They're a relatively new publisher.
Oh, you did mention this to me, yeah.
Yeah, so I picked up at the King's Comic Sale, 50% off for all three of them.
Nice.
They are the trades for The Seven Deadly Sins by C. Chun. He's the founder of TKO.
Mm-hmm.
The Fearsome Dr. Fang, a very pulpy, kind of really fun, swashbuckling tale. And the last one's by Joss Dicehart, Goodbye Paradise. So they're the ones that have been released from TKO. So on my hit list is there's a Garth Ennis one to be that he'd released called Sarah.
Okay.
Set in the amongst Russian soldiers. Mm. So female Russian soldiers.
I've always got a bit of time for Garth Ennis.
Yeah. So that I think was sold out. So, but wow. I'm tracking that one down. A couple of Valiant Deluxe hardcover editions. Again, we mentioned before Britannia. By Peter Milligan.
Yes, I've heard good things about this.
Oh, fantastic. Dave, I think you would really love it.
I love the Roman Empire.
Oh, it's really cool.
Roman Empire, my rankings are Roman Empire is my favourite empire, closely followed by the Viking invasions.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, you would love this. It's got Nero in it, I believe.
Oh yeah, who fiddled while Rome burned.
Yeah, he's a crazy, crazy guy. You know, lustful fellow.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's based on Antonius the Detectioner, apparently the first detective in history. So he detects, you know, these cases.
I should check this out.
Really good, really good. Juan Jose Rip is the artist. Fantastic artist. I can't laud him enough.
Okay.
And there's also Imperium, which is like an offshoot of the Harbingers, again, in hardcover deluxe. So I'm aiming for these hardcovers, Dave. They're really good.
Yeah, okay. So. Now, we were talking the other day about Valiant.
Yep.
I said to you that I'll probably try some Bloodshot. Would you say it's a good place for me to start?
Bloodshot, absolutely.
Okay. I've actually got the first 26 issues.
Yep.
Of Bloodshot and Harbinger on my iPad.
Yep. Go for the Bloodshot 2012, which I believe you've got.
Yes.
You'll burn through those 20 issues. I went through them like anything. They were so
cool. Well, I might even do them on the show very shortly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Do it.
Because next week is all Dread.
Yes.
But I think the week after that, I'll probably do Bloodshot.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Look, I'll send my thoughts in.
Definitely. We'd love to hear your thoughts. So that's a new segment. Oh, and I want to shout out something else. Star Wars TIE Fighter 4. Now, I don't know if you heard this show that we did. As a kid to an adult, I was always obsessed with the TIE Fighter pilots. I think they're the coolest. You might notice on my shelf up here, Ray, I've got a TIE Fighter pilot.
Oh, yes.
And basically, I always wanted to be a TIE Fighter pilot.
Yes.
And finally, Marvel put out what I thought was going to be the comic for me. Stu did not like it. I enjoyed it, but I said to Stu, what I really want is them bombing like rebel cities and stuff. Like, I in my mind, like, you don't need to make them, like, they're just like working for the Air Force or something. They're not bad people.
Yep, sure.
But, like, if you're in the Air Force and you're given a job like bomb Baghdad, You do it,
yeah.
And I wanted that in the comic, but instead we got like a think piece, lots of chatting, lots of talking, lots of guys converting to the rebellion. And I'm like, what happened to my concept where these are just full-on military guys and girls? Because male and female can both be TIE Fighter pilots. So I felt like it wasn't quite what I wanted. But you know, in Stu's absence, I'm going to check out TIE Fighter pilot by myself.
Go for it.
Because Stu dismissed it.
Oh.
And I try to stick up for it. But so if issue 4 comes out, I'm going to get the first 2, 3, and 4 issues.
Uh-huh.
And cover them all. Maybe not next week because it's going to be all Dread, but probably the week after.
So from the sounds of it, they weren't good soldiers, right? So they weren't following orders. There's a bit more of a...
There was a lot of... A couple of them were, but there was a couple who were very much looking at the rebellion and questioning orders.
Is that why Stu didn't like it as well? Because
I don't know. I forget why Stu didn't like it. Like, you know, he had his reasons. he felt there was too many characters.
Mm-hmm.
He was taking pot shots at me because I was saying I wanted them bombing Rebel City. You know, I wanted, like, basically no... quarter given to the rebellion, because I believe if you pick four, say, US bomber pilots, you're not getting any of them going, well, we should go and join the Iraqis. You know what I mean? They're military, born and bred.
Yeah, they are.
And they're just hitting their targets again. And I wanted that. So I wanted that.
Yes.
And it just didn't, wasn't giving me what I wanted. But you know what? I'm going to check out issues 2, 3, and 4.
Yep.
The whole point is, though, they're so desperate to show, to humanize the characters.
Yeah, right.
And their way they humanize them is they make them weak.
Mm.
You know, but I wanted some stories about some guys and gals who are just hard chargers.
Just like some military stories.
Yeah, some military stuff. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And just like the Crusades, they haven't made that Crusades movie yet. They certainly haven't written the fucking TIE fighter pilot comic yet. And I thought it was like from heaven. I was like, this is what I've been waiting for my whole life. Oh, so
that's a disappointment.
Yeah. And it, well, yeah, a little bit. That's why I'm bringing it up. But that's Shopping with Damon Ray, closed for the week. You know, it's a light week for us, really.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Now, what have we got left? Now, finally, we're up to Trade of the Week with Spencer and Locke, Volume 1. I failed to say it at the start of the show.
You did.
Which I always failed to do because Stu wasn't here to remind me.
Yep.
I even wrote it in to remind myself and then I forgot.
Yeah.
Now... why don't you give us the pitch, right? Because it was your pick and you brought over your trade.
Yeah, okay. So this written by David Popoza and written by, drawn by Jorge Santiago. And the pitch is, what if Calvin and Hobbes were living and breathing, grew up in Sin City?
Series I loved.
Yeah, in Sin City.
Sin City.
So these are, so what happens is that there's a detective, Locke. Again, some mental issues here. He carries with him a toy panther. It's his imaginary friend, which he's taken into adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And they both solve crimes in a very seedy, dark underbelly of a city. Yep.
And I felt it was a very fast and good read.
Mm.
I burned through. It was only 4 issues, wasn't it?
Only 4 issues. Yeah.
I thought at first that when you originally told it to me, I... thought it was actually like sort of playing an anthropomorphic character. I thought that was going to be just the, that was just the relationship, like not a pretend person, just like an anthropomorphic kind of cat character or something. Then I read it and I was like, oh, okay. And then I also thought that he was going to be triggered to create the character, but it felt like he'd always had that character since childhood.
Yeah, he did. And it goes, it actually goes quite deep and dark because...
very.
Yeah, because Locke had an abusive parent. He had two abusive parents, a mother and a father. He had been, sexually assaulted when he was young by his babysitter.
Yeah.
There's all this heavy stuff.
Pretty heavy.
Yeah, which kind of informs his character and kind of explains why he is as he is. He himself, as a detective, is not your down-the-line detective. He doesn't mind a bit of violence. He's almost... quite psychotic when he meets one of his old high school bullies.
Sure.
Who he actually had bitten his ear off when he was younger, and we see later on he burns a cigarette into his other ear. So he's not adverse to violence. But
he's a bit of a hard charger.
He is a hard charger. So I found all this stuff, this really dark stuff, juxtaposed with, you get these little panels when he's young, imagining as Calvin and Hobbes like.
Yes.
And it's really just, I don't know, I think that it's a fresh take on a detective slash someone with a mental...
Well, Ray, you came in, I know Ray is just this kind of like funny guy on the internet, like makes a lot of cool comments.
Yeah.
And I started going, what the fuck is Ray reading in his spare time? Like, Jesus Christ, like the mother's abusing with a broken beer bottle at one point.
Oh, it's very, but it's really, and there's...
It was a good pick, man.
Yeah,
a very good
pick. And like as you said, 4 issues long. The pacing I thought was really good. It was a very quick read, but I always have problems with 4-issue arcs because I don't think they are long enough. But I think Popoza over here, he rounded out quite well.
I think this was a very well paced 4 issues,
exactly.
Actually.
Yeah,
and in fact, it left me curious for more.
Mm.
And it is a very bleak Sin City like world, but it's interspersed with these lighter moments of his childhood, which then turn really dark.
Yeah,
and you're like, wow, this is really kind of like a bit of a sort of internal comic book as well.
Yes,
It took some. unexpected detours that I really enjoyed.
Yes.
I found this was one of the better books that we've done on the Signal. I'd probably give it a 9 out of 10.
I'm carried.
The art's very good. Yep. It tells the story well. But the story was unexpectedly interesting.
Yes.
I really thought it was going to be the story of a detective and his cat friend. And I was like, a caper.
Yeah, sure.
And
yeah.
Then I, you told me about it. I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And but then I went deeper than I expected.
Yeah.
And I really responded to it and will certainly read the second series. And I think there is no better advertisement for a book than that. Than if you read four issues of something, I don't even know who published it. Who published it?
Action Labs.
Action Labs. Yeah. Who I've heard of before have done some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is an excellent book. And again, what's the title?
Spencer and Locke. It's just volume one. So currently Spencer and Locke 2 is out now.
Mm-hmm.
I think issue 4. Again, it's only a 4-issue arc.
Okay. Are you reading it?
Yeah, I am. I've only read the first two. I've got 3 on my pile. I think I've got 3 and 4 on my pile.
So is it coming out currently kind of thing? Like,
yeah, well, no, there's been a lag, but he's... I've been waiting for Spencer and Locke 2... since the end of last year, and it's only just come out.
How did you come across this one?
From a podcast listened to. Just thought it was it sounded interesting.
Sure.
So I thought I'd give a. I picked it up. Thought I'd give
That's
it.
That's a good thing about podcasts. Yeah. Like when you listen to a round of various ones, you can come across some cool stuff. Mm. When I first got back into podcasts, a lot of my reading was informed by what they were reading.
Yeah,
you know,
me too.
And then you kind of develop your own tentacles,
yeah, exactly,
and go your own routes. But just, this is a really good book.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it is absolutely. I would urge anyone to go.
What did I give it? 9.
You can 9. I'd 9. Give it.
Stu keeps tabulates the score. So Stu, if you're listening, tabulate. What do you give it?
Yeah, I give it a 9.5. 9.5. Very good book.
Because you don't see that we average it out.
Okay.
So Stu has the score lines for everything, so this would be 9.25.
Okay.
That's why I was so pissed off when he gave Judge Dredd Chopper Goes to Oz 3, because he fucked with the scoring. Like, I had the shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I was, like, not happy. I was like, seriously, Stu, you've just... I went higher.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, well, there's only one way to battle this.
Can you exceed 10? No.
No, you can't. Oh, no, I think I gave an 11 to Dark Knight Returns. Yeah.
But, you know, just incidentally as well, Spencer Locke 2... It picked up, I think, the award for best independent comic release in one of the categories.
So there's a bit of like praise.
There's a bit of groundswell for it as well. David Proposer, always very amenable to coming on podcast. Dave,
really?
And okay. I told him, I tweeted him saying that coming on the Signal. I said I'd give his Spencer Locke a good shout out.
We should give it a big shout out. It's a really good book, I hadn't heard of it before in my life. So, I'm really pleased to have read it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm getting more and more interested in stuff that's still reasonably mainstream, but just not the big two.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking a story like that, it's fascinating.
There's so much out there, isn't there?
Yeah, and I'm starting to dip my toes into it all again. And I think part of that's on the podcast. You get burnt out doing Marvel DC all the time, especially Marvel.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, Batman I can always rely on.
Yes.
You know, but like, there's a lot of stuff out there, and I think it's time to start exploring.
Yeah, and you discover writers like David Proposer as well, who's very, very capable with what they can do.
100%. 100%. Look, that was a really interesting take. And, one thing I sometimes like to do on the reviews is not give too much detail away. I want people to go and experience it themselves.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. And then come back from the war and tell me what you thought. You know? Now, okay, so we've reached, Ray, the end of the Signal. Now... Next week, I don't know if I've told you this, we're doing wall-to-wall Dredd, Judge Dredd.
Yes.
So I'm doing two trades of Judge Dredd. One is Judge Dredd Origins, which came out in the mid, I hate saying the word noughties, but like 2005.
Sure.
And another one is Judge Dredd Inferno by Mark Miller and Grant Morrison, which came out in the early 90s, neither of which I've read. So what I wanted to do was, considering I've got a deep history of Judge Dredd, I wanted to read some stories that I hadn't read yet so I would have a fresh perspective and still have the whole backlog of all the other stuff I've read. I'm also going to be doing probably 5 to 6 issues of the magazine that have come out recently.
Uh-huh.
So that's also going to be happening as well. So I'm doing a fair amount of Dredd on next show.
Dreadfest.
It's going to be a Dreadfest, man. What I would love to do is get Alan Grant on the podcast. Uh-huh. He's a difficult man to reach. He's older now. He wrote a lot of Judge Dredd with John Wagner and then went on to do a lot of Batman as well.
Wow.
Lobo and all sorts of things. Yeah. Like, he's one of my goals for the podcast to come on. He worked with Chuck on Batman.
Yep.
And Chuck said he's just a fantastic guy.
How's the continuity in Judge Dredd? Like, with these different writers?
Aging in real time.
Yeah, but I mean, do the writers, are they true to...
Oh, yeah, because John Wagner, who's been on the title since the beginning, her co-creator, has stayed on the title.
Okay.
So
he informs, like, the Grant Morrison... who was the other
guy? Mark Miller.
Yeah.
Mark Miller, who wrote
Space
Bandits. Yeah. Right. Because they both came from UK originally. Mm-hmm. So, a lot of writers. It's got its own continuity for sure.
Great.
No, the whole point of Judge Dredd is supposedly... each year of the comic is a year in the city.
Yes, right.
So, it is fairly continuity-based.
And to see a Judge Dredd on your desk there.
Yeah, Judge Dredd bobblehead. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's always keeping things safe on the streets, man. I love Judge Dredd. Like I said, I read him all through high school, well into my uni days, and I never thought... I always saw Judge Dredd as a hero.
Yeah, yeah.
When I heard it was a satire, I was like, what? But it's become less of a satire as the years have gone on.
Yeah.
And, of course, when you're a kid, when you're 12, when you're 13... I mean that hyper kind of realism, yeah, the hyper style, I responded to it so much.
Yep.
So we're doing those two trades, plus some magazines, and, you know, plenty of other stuff. I'm going to be going into it full on.
Yeah.
Ray, what shows have you got coming out? You must have, your dance card's pretty full.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still plugging along with our Into the Night and Moon Knight podcast.
Who's on this week?
Just Connor and myself, Connor Shearer and myself. We're reviewing...
The Old Firm.
The Old Firm, The Old Guard. We're reviewing another issue of Bendis, funnily enough, issue 2. Okay. So that's in our modern run review. In our Last Sons of Krypton, the Superman podcast, the other Connor and I, we are going to review, I think it's a Mongol story.
From Warworld.
I've got no idea. Yeah, Connor,
really?
Yeah, no, yeah. So I'm on this.
Is it whatever happened? What happened to the man who gets everything or whatever?
No, I've read that. But Connor's dug up a really cool one by Kurt Swan and I think Len Wein.
Okay.
And it's got Mongol. I said, look, it's got to have...
Kurt Swan, yeah, fantastic.
I know, he's good. Yeah. I said, it's got to have something with Mongol in it, please. So Connor, just pick something. Look, I'm on the ride for this. Connor is the very, experienced Superman fan.
Sure.
I just, throw in my 2 cents. But that should be good. Should be good. So we've got them coming up, recording this week.
So a lot of stuff happening there. Now, as we mentioned, members of the collective, check us out. Follow us at Signal of Doom on Twitter. I'm at RedLantern2051 on Twitter. Like us on the Facebook page. Ray, what's your Twitter and all that kind of stuff?
Twitter handle at ITK Moon Knight. I believe the Superman podcast at LSK podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Just find us there. Facebook, just look up Into the Night and Moon Knight podcast or Last Sons of Krypton.
Mm. And definitely, shout out to Neil Matthews and other guys out there. If you want to write in anything about Judge Dredd, anything related to 2000 AD, write it in. Either you can message me directly on Facebook or at, what is it, signaldoom@gmail.com, or message the Facebook page and I will definitely read it out. Oh, as she knows, I won't read out anything. I'm famous for it. On that note, good night, kids.
Catch you later.